We're recording. Go ahead.
Well, welcome. Thank you for attending for the purpose of a record. This is Leon County Research and Development Authority's Board of Governors meeting. The day is Thursday, June 7th. It is 11:15. A little bit late starting here, so I'll call the meeting to order. We have a number of guests in the room. Let me start with allowing our guests to introduce themselves. Would you like to begin?
Sure. I'm Ed Marie with NAI County.
I'm going to ask Ed or give him a few minutes to make a comment in just a minute. Other guests?
Yes, Stephanie Chalet with NAI Town Board.
Yep. Any others?
Lori.
Lori Campbell with NAI Town Board.
Okay, all right.
Did you?
Oh, Christina Paredes with Office.
Hi, Christina.
Yep. Hi.
Tim?
Tim Moore, Vice President of Research, brought in the University of Dublin.
Welcome, guests. We're glad to have you. This is the first in maybe several meetings that we may have sort of off of our premise and onto the tenant's premise, and gives us an opportunity to get to know the tenant a little bit more, and likewise for the tenant to see us in action. Paul, I appreciate your helping to arrange for this. I understand Ricardo will be joining us in 10 or 15 minutes or so, and we're going to allow him to have the floor for a moment as well. At this point in time, we have all the Tile Corps folks here. I think you had requested a moment, and you may have the floor.
Yeah, I'm Ed Murray. I'm the principal at NAI Tile Corps. I just want to stop by and thank you guys for letting us manage the park and represent you guys. I try to come by once a year to see if I can, I mean, I stay out of the way of my staff, because I have really good staff, and I definitely stay out of the way. But I just will always like to invite myself to just tell everybody thank you. This is an impressive building. I was chairman of the EDC when we flew up to Montreal to look at Turbo Corps when they were considering moving here. And it was when I was chairman and Bill Walwood came right after me that the whole deal was negotiated and struck. So it's really something to be proud of with having them here as a major tenant of this park. But if you guys have any questions, I know that I believe we're going to have to go through the rebid process for the contract again. We're certainly going to rebid that. We certainly would like to run out all options possible, but I don't know if that's possible or not. But we're certainly, we appreciate the work. The work's important to us. So if there are any issues, please let us know. Thank you.
And let me comment right now, too, and compliment your employees. I think they've done a fabulous job of keeping us in the good audits. So we're impressed with the improvement we have on property management. Things are going real well. So I compliment your team. You've done a nice job.
And I echo that as well. The phenomenal work they've done. We had a little sort of downturn for a while, but they recovered well from that and doing phenomenal work.
You mentioned you were on part of the team that went to Dan Foss up in Canada.
I was.
A few weeks after the official group got up there, Rob Robinson and I at the time at SunTrust both went up as well. Mm-hmm. And they have made a big difference between that facility and this facility.
Absolutely.
That facility up there was ready to be closed down. And as many of you may know, we came off and close to losing it at the 11th hour. And Bill Wall and I don't know who else, maybe Scott.
Alan,
who?
Bill and Alan had a lot to do.
Bill and Alan.
Okay. Yeah, I handed it over to Bill at five. Yeah. And then Bill and Alan finished it.
I remember Bill was really heavily involved in it. Yep. And brought it to the table finally. But a great building. This is the expansion, and then on the other side, another expansion expected shortly. So thank you again, Paul. We'll get a chance to thank Ricardo here in a little bit. Any other visitors with comments?
Thank you.
Any modifications to the agenda? Another, let's see, approval of the draft minutes went out on April 5th meeting. You had a chance to review those, hopefully. Chairs reviewed them, saw nothing that concerned him. If there are those who would suggest revisions, modifications, please so indicate. Hearing none, is your motion to approve?
Second.
Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, we have the consent agenda. That's available for you if you have your computer at attachment B. And there's the treasurer's report, financials, the investments, the Morgan Building lease, the Innovation Park Tech Grant Award, restroom petitions that require approval because of the dollar amount, janitorial services, RFP, property management, accounting services, Innovation Park, small business, the SBIR, STTR program for the FAMU, Collins Building lease, a partial lease of the lease to National Magnetic Lab, a pretty long consent agenda, but if there are no reasons to pull any of those items, the chair would be pleased to, okay, discussion?
I wasn't going to discuss, Mr. Chair, I was just going to move consent.
Okay.
And say, Tech Grant was fantastic, y'all did a great job, and really appreciate your management of the bathroom. We talked about that in more detail in exec, so just taking the opportunity, thank you all. But, yeah.
And you know summer rooms?
Yes.
Summer for men and summer for women. Okay. All right. Is there a motion? Is there a second?
Second.
There is a second. Any further discussion? Those approving the consent agenda signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by like sign. Motion carries. At this point in time, it's my real pleasure to introduce one of our partners. We have had a number of different opportunities to work together, and I think we're continuing to see more opportunities on the front burner. Dr. Timothy Moore came to FAMU, I guess, a year and a half ago now.
Somewhere. Three and a half years, time flies.
Three and a half years. Wow.
Beard shows it. I had dark hair back then.
We've asked FAMU, and we're going to ask FSU at our next meeting to give us a little bit of update about what's going on, particularly with their projects in, on, or around the campus here, and anything else that's in research that they care to talk about.
Absolutely.
Tim, you have the floor.
Thanks, sir. I'm going to stand up so everybody can see me, and you guys keep eating because you will not embarrass me. First of all, thank you for the opportunity to address you today, and thanks to Ron for his stalwart support of FAMU being here. We've kind of, I've been here 3.5 years, came in from Auburn, for those that know my background, a lot of time in the federal government, a lot of time in two other universities, the Kansas State, Auburn University, National Laboratory, and Military. Come on in, sir. Please. We got a number of things we're working on. First thing I did when I came here in 2015 was try to get the trains operating on time. Build a better reputation for FAMU as a partner in the community. Build a better way for FAMU to actually account for and be stewards of the monies we've been given by the federal government, and then try to expand that base. All right, so what we've done in the last 2 years, year over year, is we've actually had a 10% increase in our research enterprise. We're beginning to start out with license agreements now and spin-off technologies, primarily around our wine-making industry, if you will, really better known, muscadines. But we're doing something a little bit different this year, and I'll tell you kind of what's going on, which really has got me excited for this park. I'm going to throw a mouthful at you, and I apologize right up front. We have a new initiative. I'm going to Washington next Friday, called CITIC. Stands for the Construction Infrastructure Technology Innovation Center of Excellence. And it's pursuant to some discussions we've had with the White House, with Senator Rubio. He actually came on campus for the first time about 6 weeks ago. I briefed him on this extensively. That was his whole reason to come in. It was a very low-key visit. Congressman Lawson, I've engaged and retained the services of Craig Fugate, former FEMA administrator, who's now working for FAMU. We have just completed an arrangement with Camp Blanding, which is about 2 hours to the east of here. That's a National Guard asset for the state of Florida. You're going, well, okay, what does all this got to do with each other? With the storms of last year, we started looking at durable, resilient infrastructure. How do we rebuild and do it smartly, take advantage of all the technologies that are out here? And Craig Fugate is a leader in this area in terms of his vision and his ideas. And so I called him. I didn't know the guy. I called him last December and I said, hey, Craig, admired your work when you were in the federal government, admired your work when you were in the state of Florida. You're legendary. And I said, I've read your writings, and I said, they're awesome. I said, if you're the FEMA director today, where do you go get your technologies? And there was silence on the phone. And I said, that's kind of what I thought. There really is no embedded R&D. There's no way to take what's in the marketplace and bring it to bear to actually rebuild in a smarter, more efficient, more resilient, more isolated or compartmentalized fashion. So out of that conversation in December, started a white paper. That white paper went to Senator Rubio, and I worked on his staff to try to get them to get the boss engaged. And he showed up. Turned out the day we actually had our SACS site visit, we got our accreditation going on, he says, this is the day. So everything kind of converged in one day. We briefed him for 90 minutes. The senator was adamant. He wants to support it. He's ready to put it in the appropriation cycle. And so he's turned on all of his juice to help us engage HUD, FEMA, DOD, and DOT. So what's all this got to do with it? We've been reaching out to the White House coordinator for HBCUs, a guy named Jonathan Hollifield. If you haven't read his work, it's called Competitive Inclusiveness. It's about how we take disconnected and sometimes underrepresented minority classes and try to bring them to the knowledge-based economy. So with all of that, President Trump's budget this year had a lot of sweeteners in it. There's about $75 billion sitting in HUD right now that's unobligated. So we're going in and asking for a three-year $75 million ask. That's what this next week is going to be about. We're going to have 30 federals involved, staffers from the White House, Congressman Lawson, Senator Rubio, Fugate, the Deputy Adjutant General for the State of Florida will be present, myself, my president, and others. The idea behind this is to use the Innovation Park as a funnel, if you will. Not that we're doing all the innovation, but there's innovation occurring in the world at a rapid clip. But how do we bring it through some kind of funnel, qualify it as being ready to be evaluated, and then take it somewhere and actually shake, rattle, and roll it? The intent is at Blanding, because it's state property, we have less issues in terms of ground use and so forth. And the idea is that we'll become a national verification validation center for innovative construction, power, wastewater technologies. To give you an idea, we've all heard about Elon Musk and his solar-powered shingles, okay? Great, he says they work. How do you put them all together? How do you know you actually will assimilate in a package that does something on the ground somewhere? You don't. You have to take the manufacturer at their word. Sandia National Lab has built a 3D printable, flexible solar panel. They say it can replace and do things. Michigan State now has a transparent photovoltaic cell. You can peel and stick and put it on a window, make any window now a battery. Innovative. Is it durable? Does it work? We don't know. So the idea is to take all these emerging dot-coms, innovations, FFRDCs, Federally Funded Research Development Centers, and try to funnel that through some nozzle to get it to a point where you actually can put it together and make it work. If it works, it goes into a national qualified database, where then we can then work with the insurance underwriters to start writing new codes, new insurance policies around durable and innovative construction. For example, concrete building. We have a partner that is doing 30% lighter, 30% faster, 30% cheaper cast home construction. No columns or posts for a 7-story tall building. Wow. Says you can put it together with a jig on the ground using waste aggregate from the site from a disaster, rubbleize it, granularize it, put it together in a matrix, form it, put it up, and snaps together like Legos. Cool. The idea is we're going to be able to take these things through our architecture and our engineering school and focus them and a place out there. If we want to build a new building here on our acreage, it would be about a 48,000 square foot structure. We think that's going to be about a $28 million design package build. We've got a concept drawing I'll share with you guys as soon as I can kind of pull the veil back, and that's after next week, so I apologize. You're kind of getting a sneak peek. But the idea here is we want to do something bold and innovative. Why? We think that in this era of racial disharmony, we think that in this era of a widening gap between achievement and ability to earn income, we've got to step into this game and make an HBCU be a game changer. We think we have a different mission, a different role than just helping kids that are from socially disadvantaged areas get a college degree. We've got to get them ready for the 21st century economy. We think this is the way we can do it. To put it all in context, this is going to involve cyber, this is going to involve material sciences, this is going to involve construction technology, workforce development, innovation across the board. And we're going to learn things we don't know yet. And that's the beauty of all this. The White House has indicated that their staffers will be there. If this goes well next week, it'll be a brief to the president. At that point, we're going to start rocking and rolling. We're hoping to have this thing launched by the end of the fiscal year, federal fiscal year. It's an aggressive timetable. I'll tell you what my biggest challenge is. If I land this whale, I got to figure out how somebody to run this thing of national ilk, because I've got to have somebody that's got unimpeachable status to be able to be the Lord on high to run this thing. So we're really looking hard to do this. Mr. Fugate, why would I go after a guy like him? His reputation is gold. He's connected in Washington. He's a guy that understands this problem. He's the guy that has brought us the 27,000 members of the American Home Builders Association. And we've got the concrete papers and all the other folks coming to the table because we want to draw industry resources in to make sure we are at the focal point of where the rubber meets the road, okay? In the short term, we have these EDA grants, these Economic Development Administration grants from the Department of Commerce. We've been very fortunate with that. They're very excited. We're the only HBCU in the nation that has two of these. One is a university base, the other is a regional base. Why would they do that? We came up with a different way. We wanted to use our land grant mission, reaching out into the rural disaffected communities, and right on top of that spine, the ability to take innovation and entrepreneurship out to the lowest common denominator. And we're very excited about that. We've gone through some budget mods on that to make sure we tighten up what we're doing. That's been approved. We're ready to pull the trigger on that starting the end of this month, first of next month. So you start seeing some activity around that. That'll also bleed into our SBTR, SBIRs, our I-Corps, all those kind of things, because we believe this is the way we're going to generate energy and momentum around the park. Okay? Last part, and then I'll open up to questions. We want to be a partner, and I mean that in the truest sense of the word. There's $90 billion of disaster money that got cut loose in March. Majority of those dollars are unobligated dollars, meaning buildings can get built, things can get done, but you have to have an idea of how you're doing it. That's why we're pushing forward in this process. There was a $1.something trillion budget that got passed in April. Again, lots of sweetener in there, and then the 19 budgets are coming along behind it. We want to be a partner. If there's ways that we can support what you're doing, shout. If there's a way we can lead what you're doing, shout. If there's ways we can work with others, shout. Dr. Ostrander and I talk at least once a month, setting our cards on the table and figuring out how we can actually put aside past differences and figure out how these two great organizations can operate. Our joint college engineering, we're very proud of. You can remember 3 years ago when I got here, very fractious time, should we split the college? My first interview question was, what would you do with $500 million, Tim, to build a new engineering school? I was like, what are you talking about? We've gone from this level of discord to now we have a unified committee. The chancellor was over our first days of the committee meeting yesterday, Chancellor Prizer. We actually have a smooth operating procedure now for how we're moving this college forward. What's great about it is this college is the only one like it in the nation. It's the only HBCU, primary white institution college of engineering in the world. And NSF has not recognized that we're unique, so therefore we get preferential treatment on submissions. We just got an award this past year for CREST, Center for Research Excellence in Science and Technology. It's the highest minority engineering award they give out. That program is now being set us for a stage for an engineering research center. There's only 14 of those ever been awarded in the country, and they want to make the second one for an HBCU to come to this place. So that's what we're trying to play, a deep battle to bring it all back for us. We build a groundswell. The old saying is the rising tide floats all boats. That's what we're trying to do. And lastly, our business practices. I've spent a lot of time internally trying to tighten up the screws and make our operation more efficient. I've removed staff. I've streamlined our operations, knocked down duplication, and basically try to take the nonsense out of this whole deal of dealing with universities. Oh, one other thing I'll give up. Cannabis. I just briefed the board on this yesterday, so I guess I can talk about that. Cannabis. The governor passed a law, signed into law 2 years ago, saying that Florida and Florida A&M University are the two entities that can work on cannabis. And then it's cannabis from the kind you wear to the kind you smoke. All right? Because of that, we now have a hemp bill, a rule that was passed by Commissioner Putnam. We just briefed our board on that. We'll start actually entertaining those programs. Those will probably go at some of our rural agricultural facilities, Brooksville and Quincy. But there'll be a polishing and manufacturing component to it. We've been approached by no less than 28 companies wanting to partner with us to get licensed in the state of Florida to grow industrial hemp. And then the hemp manufacturing, post-manufacturing processing. So those will be things we're going to try to steer them in the innovation part. And those are legal, by the way. It's nothing bad. We've been approached by two medical cannabis companies wanting to do investigative new drug discoveries for FDA licensure. They're coming full loaded. $35 million in one case. They'll pay for everything, turnkey operation. They're looking for space. That'd be a building within a building, okay? Let me tell you, though, I know Jeff Sessions personally when I was in the state of Alabama. He doesn't take a high view of medical cannabis per se. However, I think he's kind of been drowned out. At FAMU, in order to be Rhode Island Technical University, we've created a FAMU Research Foundation, which is about to become a 501c3 nonprofit enterprise. It allows us to limit the liability, the risk of the university, and allows us to take money in and do various and sundry things and not entangle the university. So we're trying to come up with some innovative products for how we want to do this so that we can serve the needs of the state, serve the needs of customers that are coming in, and be an amplifier for business activities. Okay. And Dave, with that, sir, I'll turn it back to your group for questions and answers, because I know I'm episodically in and out of this movie. She's already got a hand. No, I can't give you three samples. I'm sorry about that. Yes, ma'am.
Fast question, back to the beginning. CIT, the acronym.
Yes, ma'am. Construction, Infrastructure, technology, Innovation Center of Excellence. It's a mouthful. I apologize.
Right.
The idea is we want to have this all-encompassing belly button to try to draw money through.
Right. And I think, I mean, it sounds like a fabulous idea. Are you public with this yet?
Not yet, ma'am. So. And I will just say this. This is a public forum. I know people can come in.
You say you are now.
I am now. I was yesterday, too, so it doesn't matter. But we're kind of doing a soft rollout because I've got a time on target next Friday at 1 o'clock. We're in Secretary of Austin's conference room. We got all these agencies coming in, and so that's when it's really going to get revealed. And then we're going to have some sidebars after that. So there'll be a press release that comes out of this next week, but you won't see anything in the paper until then, okay?
I didn't understand what you said about Blanding. I just heard the word
Camp Blanding. Camp Blanding, if you don't know, is over between Gainesville and St. Augustine.
Well, I know where it is.
73,000 acres of property. It's a training base that started in World War II, and they have a National Go to War mission, but it's a state-owned asset. So why is that important? It allows us some flexibility in how we use the space and what we can do with it. Instead of trying to go to a federal facility and create a federally owned, federally operated activity.
But you know that's where you're going to be?
Yes, ma'am. That's correct. Well, let's put it this way. The TAG, General Calhoun, two-star who runs the Florida National Guard, and the DAG, who is the Deputy Adjutant General, who is General Chauncey. General Chauncey was here 3 weeks ago. I briefed him in person, and they are fully committed to this. We won't have an official buy-in on that until I brief the Army Board, which will be on the 20th of this month. But because General Chauncey and the base commander are both flying up to Washington, I guess wrong, since they're on board. Okay, I don't want to commit their resources. The governor still has to weigh in on that, by the way. And, yes, ma'am.
Tim, you got a lot going on.
Not much.
Yes, we haven't gotten an update in a while, so this is exciting. So two questions about the center, which I agree is pretty exciting way to seize an opportunity with this. One, you're looking at innovation part, I mean, doing something locally.
Yes, ma'am.
But also at the camp. Is there a particular reason why you started looking at that one? I understand the dynamics of the property and state and things like that, but was that the only location versus looking at something in our region?
Let me tell you why we got here. Okay. So you don't think I just pulled something out of space, not to take any away from Leon or County or Tallahassee or the park. We wanted a lot of unencroached space because we don't know how big the footprint's going to ultimately be. One, two. I'm a big believer in dual use. If I build it one time and I say, okay, validate it, and I step aside and leave it, then it becomes assets that can be claimed by the Florida National Guard to propagate the military mission and the disaster response mission for the state. Third thing, if Blanding is the COOP site for the state government, that's the continuity of operations for the COG site, continuity of government operations for the state. So when we had our hurricane last fall, the governor relocated out there. Third thing, all Army emergency managers worldwide train at Camp Blanding. So we're looking at dual-use technologies. You say, okay, disaster response, forward operating base. They look very similar. Austere conditions, power's spotty, wastewater spotty, water spotty, housing and protection spotty. So the idea is we want to be able to have dual use capabilities for both military and that. The reason is this, folks, I'm playing the long game. Mm-hmm. I've got short-term money available. The long-term dollars on the Trump administration are going to be DHS and Homeland and Department of Defense. So we want to be able to play in both those camps. So I want to build a relationship that gets this university front and center in where the money's going to be coming in. Does that make sense?
It does.
And by the way, if I may, just for a second, what's going to be here? We're envisioning a four-story building on the 12-acre site that will actually serve to house the headquarters of what we do, that will then have limited bench capabilities. We're not making a full engineering lab. I can't do that because that would be untrue to the investment the state's already made in the engineering school and the architecture school. The idea is that will be the nucleus and we'll have some technologies demonstrated there, primarily with the headquarters. Blanding is going to be where the wrenches get turned, the cranes go up, and all the dust and stuff constantly goes up and goes down. That's I don't think that's what you want in this park. At least that would be my thing for businesses like Ancor. You don't want to have your business opportunity operations interrupted by a guy cutting the power cable or something like that.
Yeah, all that makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah,
listen,
that's good,
trust
yeah.
me.
And I think, you know, we've already dealt with vibrations and things like that from FDOT out here, so there's a certain
sensitivity
to that. So lastly, it sounds like this is a testing facility for companies, for private sector tech, could be public sector as well, but you're testing it to see whether or not, and I'm glad you mentioned connected with code and the national code and the product list and everything like that. I mean, that's, those are different in every state.
Right.
So you're not thinking of a center that would help people commercialize products.
Absolutely would. And let me tell you why that is. Let me tell you why that's important.
Critical.
There may be orphan technologies that come out that we can pair up with our SBDC and others to help actually find underrepresented or 8A minority-owned kind of business owners to help take those to market. One of the other issues, as a former federal, when you have your federal procurement contracts, you go down the flow downs, you have to have a certain amount of set-asides or inclusions that are in there. One of our biggest challenges, women-owned businesses involving technology, minority-owned businesses involving technology, they just don't exist. And so you constantly see when you're doing proposal review, well, look here, there's Bill Smith and Bill Smith Incorporated over and over and over again because they're the only guy or gal in the field. We think that's just not achieving America's full potential. So we want to be able to help solve that process. Make sure I'm clear here. There's a world of innovation going on out there. Don't believe it? Look at the Internet of Things going on construction sites, looking at RFID wearable tags. Is Christian Dozier getting fatigued on the work site because of the way her head's wobbling in her side of her helmet? There's algorithms that are being developed all the time. Concrete systems doing robotic assembly processes, robotic bricklaying processes. Do they have applications? If so, how so, where so? And so we know there's a whole field of things going on. How do we pre-vet those to look at those that are ready to go? What we would call out of the government old lexicon, GOTS, COTS, and NDI. Government off the shelf, commercial off the shelf, or non-developmental items. If it's got to have something done to it, well, then we can look for ways we can run that back in the engineering school. What will we do with those? We'll offer to buy the unit. We'll offer to subsidize their travel to Blanding or Tallahassee to validate their work, and then we'll pay to ship it back. And the idea is it's at no cost to the actual vendor that brings it to the table. And it's everything from power to wastewater. For those that don't know, we partner with a group, FAMU has, with a group out of Hungary called Biopolis. Biopolis has a self-contained wastewater treatment system. So you know, you go by the airport, you see that nasty mess that's out there, and you think of the acreages out there. That's 19th century technology for how we handle human waste. They can do it on 25% of the same footprint, 25% footprint, 75% space savings, no smell. They're doing it in Asia. Asia is building, you know, 600,000-700,000 person cities now with wastewater systems that you're walking on that are your botanical garden sources. So we're thinking, why are we tethered to these old ways of doing things? Power, what happened in Puerto Rico? The infrastructure was archaic. When it broke and got slammed by the storm, you can't find the replacement parts because nobody makes them anymore. So we've got to come up with ways to discrete, compartmentalize energy, water, housing, and so forth. Build it all as a unit so if something fails, all of it doesn't fail. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So the idea is we kind of come at this with a little bit of a bigger, and then prominently place the HBCU as a leader in this area as a way to help
I just want to put a marker down because I'm really interested in what you're saying. The idea that this is construction, infrastructure, transportation really speaks to something that has been bugging me for years. In terms of bringing our societies closer together, people who have and people who do not, the ability to get workers, particularly people who do not have, to where they need to be, to do the work they can do, to take advantage of the programs you're talking about,
right.
That's truly still in the 19th century.
Yes, ma'am.
So if there's any piece of this.
We've done part of this, by the way, with this guy's help right here. I'll pick on him for just a second. You can't get away from this. We formed with the city of Tallahassee, IO Avenue. It was with our continuing education department, Dummy Station, city of Tallahassee. It was the idea to help provide digital skills to those that didn't have them.
Right.
So they could actually go from flipping burgers to making $50,000
right.
a year. And we're running classes through that. What we're looking for now, what I'm out doing, is trolling for sponsors. TMH, for example. Do you need medical coders? Oh, yeah, we need them. Well, if you'll pay for the class, we'll get this young lady signed up. She can get in the class, pass, and she's got a job when she gets out. Now she's motivated. What's the class? $6,000 for 12 weeks. It's a lot of money. The idea is the system now propagates itself. I'm not looking for a federal or a state or a city grant to run it. It runs on its own perpetual motion. And then we're changing lives. That's what we think we're in the business of, is changing lives. That's our vision. And so it's not just sitting there waiting for the federal government to dump money. We want to be able to be an active partner in challenging the paradigms for how our society is going to the 21st century so we don't leave anybody behind. If you left behind, it's because you don't want to be there.
Well, and part of that, I think, is actual physical transportation as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Look.
And people are still stuck where they don't need to be stuck.
Look, I'll give you an example. I have three sons. The way they learn is different, fundamentally different than the way I learned 100,000 years ago. And the way the kids today are learning and the way they're consuming education at universities is based on a latte approach. I want it when I want it, how I want it, where I want it. We're going to have to be adaptable to that. And the same way goes with innovation. We've got to be able to meet it and not just say, we built this beautiful building now, Ron's going to show up and bring it over here. Mm-hmm. Ron's the innovator. Ron doesn't have the capital to do all that. We've got to find somebody to reach back. And I've done this in another fashion. I'll just say this to you. When I was at Auburn, we did a program. After 9/11, we were worried that Saddam had all these bad things, bad intel, of course, as we now know in hindsight, perhaps even in foresight. But at the time we went into Iraq, we had 8,000 doses of botulinum antitoxin in the U.S. inventory. That was it. Had no production source. So they formed a program called BARDA, the Biomedical Advanced Research Development Activity. The idea was, well, Kristen Dozier's out here, she's got a vaccine popping in her head, we'll just build this wonderful pot of cash over here so that she can tap into it and commercialize her vaccine. Well, the problem was, she's in an innovative state, she's not at a prove-out state. And so the government missed this void. We're the only vaccine in Auburn. We did the only vaccine's been FDA licensed. That was a $60 million program. The university made money on it, the community made money on it, and now you've got some swagger. The same thing's going to happen here. I really believe we're going to replicate that same kind of an approach and fill in this void between innovation and commercialization. It's got to occur. We're going to make this mega economy actually work. I don't mean to preach to you. I apologize. Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Let me go ahead. Please.
I was just going to ask, I mean, to the extent that, so to the pipeline that you're describing in terms of taking ideas or technologies, basically putting them through this center that essentially allows them to have a proof of concept, mm-hmm. it works, it can be commercialized. Are there potential opportunities for our local economic development professionals, for instance, to know about some of those opportunities? Or, I mean, one of the things that I think I learned when we went to Sid Martin, for instance, in Gainesville, is the university, the way that they define success, right? They ask themselves research dollars, retention rates, graduation rates, but they also ask themselves, how many businesses did we help start in Gainesville? How many jobs did we grow in Gainesville? Of the businesses we started last year, how many? So to what extent that do you think that there's sort of, you know, shared intel that allows for potentially some of those companies who are coming in,
sure.
having their proof of concept to also think about, or maybe they set up shop here in Tallahassee?
Oh, you did question. Absolutely.
What I'm saying is there a role for that to play?
Absolutely.
That communication is happening.
The answer to the question is yes, sir, there is, emphatically so. And the reason for it is this. Just because it was invented in Berkeley, California, doesn't mean it's not going to be manufactured in Tallahassee, Florida,
right.
or put into practice in Florida itself. Look, folks, there's another reason for landing. Why landing? We had multiple hurricanes. We're going to have multiple hurricanes again. Okay? We went through this where FEMA actually located on our campus as part of the downstate response capability. We view this as part of our mission, and since the storm occurs here, why not have the innovation also take place here and also have the ability to transport it and connect it here? That was the other part behind this. I would love to do it at Fort Anning University. I'd love to have it out on my back 40, but I don't have enough space, and I don't want to displace people, and I don't want to create a confusion, and I don't have the road infrastructure and so forth. You follow me. This is a place that is already set up to do these kinds of things, and that's what we're looking for. Just to put it in final summation, the money is there, the political will is there. Both White House, legislative vote from the House and the Senate side, Rubio has put all the cards on the table for us, and I have to thank him for that. I have to say this to you, for those that don't know him, I had never met the man before. I didn't even get off the Berkeley welcome slide. He was seven questions in before I got off the title slide for the presentation. He was that geared up, that focused, and just slamming me. And his three questions were, and they were the same question, has this ever been done before? And the answer was no. You tell me this is unique in the universe. Yes, sir, it is. No other school's doing it. No, sir, they're not. And so then at that point, he turned to his chief of staff and said, we're going to make this a priority. And they have done just that. I'm telling you, they have lit up Washington. And like I said, Secretary DeVos is is going to give up her conference room, and Brogan, Secretary Brogan is going to meet us afterwards to make sure that we are getting the right kind of touch afterwards. So we feel like we've got all the pieces lined up, but who knows? It's always a fickle beast.
Tim, I want to thank you for your discussion today. We could go on and on and
yes,
on.
Sir, and I don't want to hijack you. You've got important stuff to do.
I can really sense the enthusiasm you bring to the program.
Yes, sir.
I'm glad you're here in Tallahassee. I'm glad you're on the Manview campus. I'm glad you're on our campus.
Yes, sir.
It's a great partnership. We look forward to supporting you.
Yes, sir.
As you support this community, as you support your institution.
And thank you. And I want to say a shout out to Ron, because Ron has been absolutely stalwart supporting us every step of the way. Every crazy, stupid question I ask, every time, hey, Ron, I need something by tomorrow, it's done. And you can't get that anywhere. Dustin, when he was on the Evil Empire side of the city down there, same way. We could sit there and have evil thoughts over coffee and come up with some strategies and just go, why the hell can't we do that? And that's kind of the way I think about it. So if you all have ideas about what we can do, shout. Because we're here to support the community. That's our job. If I'm not doing that, then you need to find somebody else to do this job. Okay? Thank you so much for your time today. I apologize. I've got to run back to a board meeting because they're voting on budgets and all this other good stuff. But I'll come back and give you a deeper dive on CITIC when we come back. I'll make that assurance to you. I don't want to displace my colleague, Dr. Ostrander, but I'll give you the full dive, all 75 slides of it, if you really want to. But I'll give it to you so you get an idea of how we're operating. Because embedded in there's some of the magic how we're trying to make this happen.
Exciting time.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
Yes.
Thank
you. Good team. Yes, good to see you as well.
Good luck to you on all these programs.
No, thank you. Appreciate it, Ron.
Thank you.
Exactly. Thank you.
Okay. And keep us informed.
Yes, sir. I will. I apologize for my protracted absence. If Ms. Noja hadn't put the restraining order on me, I would have been here more.
It is my great pleasure now to introduce one of our best friends, one of the community's best advocates, Ricardo Schneider. Ricardo gave me a call about 3 or 4 years ago and said, Dan Foss is getting ready to do some expansion with some of their labs. And we've got a couple in China, we've got a couple in Denmark, but we really believe that Tallahassee might have an opportunity to put in an air conditioning facility that would be state-of-the-art technology and research on how commercial and air conditioning systems work globally. And I think we can get that here. But what team do I need to put together? And so we pulled together at the time the EDC, the city, the county, the state, a number of different resources. And Ricardo made his pitch. He said, there are going to be a lot of my peers trying to get this for their hometown. And we've got a shot at it. I think we can do it. But I need this community support to make it happen. Ricardo was able to move forward that concept to have this building that we're sitting in today. Ricardo, you're a great asset to this community. I appreciate you. Please share with us a little bit about Dan Foss. Please share with us a little bit about your future plans. Anything else you want to tell us? You have the floor, sir.
No, I appreciate the time, and I'm not taking too much from your time. I know you're all busy. And Paul and myself would like to, first of all, welcome all to Danfoss. We are very proud to be part of the community, and a community that has tremendous potential for companies like Danfoss to cooperate and create more jobs in this community. So we have been through some experience in town in terms of expanding and planning, and some good, some bad. And I would like to make sure that we, as part of this community, that we create a clear vision where we want to go. We align the city, the county, the Innovation Park, FSU, FAMU, the private sector, to make sure that we have a comprehensive new strategy that we can all win. And I think that we are competing with the places that are clear ecosystems around technologies, around opportunities to create jobs, and we need to be smart, and we need to be very sharp what we want to do. So let's say if we spread around trying to do too many things, we are going to probably lose focus, we are going to be not be efficient, and if we focus around few things that we want to accomplish, we have a better chance to succeed. So I strongly recommend that we fully align Cedar Tallahassee, the Young County, the Innovation Park, universities, and private sector to make sure that we all can build a winning strategy. I think we're making good progress. The OEB has been very open and helping to shape some of these strategies. We are getting to a phase now of execution. So in the execution is the details and how to get this up and running. But I think that since I've been here, I see a very good amount of energy going from the same direction. Again, we are very pleased to be here, we are very proud to be here. There is tremendous potential in this community. So what FMU, FSU, TCC have in this community is fantastic. For business like we are, we need to just be better how to sell it, how to market, how to engage with the private sector to make sure that all this tremendous potential can be visible and can be understood how to collaborate. And we have more plans for Tallahassee. We are expanding to another level. And I don't think we are going to stop here. Because as long as we find this productive environment and good collaboration with the community, we will continue to expand. So I think that things are going to be very exciting future. We are just starting. But I would like to see more companies like this. And I have been a little bit critical about our results. We have been here for 10 years. We are probably the only one company that we have attracted in this field. We need more companies like Google Cloud. It's hard for us to recruit people here. The first thing that the spouse has, where I can find a job for my wife, my husband, and we don't have too many options. So it's hard to us to recruit the people. We are getting better and better. But if you have more dentists around here, if you have all the companies that create jobs that are attractive for young families who move to Florida, it is going to help tremendously. So I really encourage to all of us work together. And we need to be effective on the things that we are doing to land at least 3-5 companies the next 5 years. If you don't do it, we are not doing our job. So the results of the job, what we are doing here is to attract companies to help a new startup to create more jobs. If you don't do it, we are not doing our job. So sometimes I'm a little bit too
to you're 100% right.
So if you have any questions, I have been trying to help the Economic Vitality Office with this magnetic task force. That's one way to have a very clear approach to attract companies that have something to do with magnetic technologies. And a lot of people don't understand how magnetic technologies are relevant to everything that we have today, that we, from computers to mobile phones to electrical cars to windmills to compressors like we have here. So magnetic technologies are core of a major innovation that is in the market today and will be in the future. So we are trying this magnetic task force to select very clear vertical magnetic targets like MRIs or companies that have to do something with high performance electrical motors to make sure that we will bring companies here that can have the same benefit as we have as Stanford to collaborate with the NACLA and all the research areas from FSU. So we are the largest magnetic ecosystem in the world. A lot of people don't believe us here. What we have in town, we have the largest magnetic lab in the world here. We are the largest single magnetic compressor producer in the world here now. let's say, we have to expand this ecosystem. In my experience, this is the best shot that we have to attract other companies. We cannot compete with Palo Alto, we cannot compete with Boston, with some other ecosystem. We have to create and expand our own ecosystem. That is, to me, probably one of the ways to help the community to grow. That's not the only one, but it's one of them. So if you select a couple of them, then we focus on it and stay firm for the next years and do not deviate and waste time and energy trying to do other things. Focus on a few of them, will be successful. So if you have any questions, any comments?
I think somebody, and perhaps it was you, gave the description at one time of the magnetic coast. I thought that was just a great tag. Perhaps it was your tag, but magnetism, as you indicated, is what we can and should be focusing on. Mm-hmm. And I thank you for your leadership. I thank you for what you have contributed. Questions to Ricardo?
Dave, I'll just echo what
Christina
said. Ricardo, I think it was about 7 years ago, we sat down together, and two things stand out to me to this day. One, it was the trailing spouse issue. But two, that it was a hard sell to recruit people to come and work for you because there weren't other manufacturers in town. What, you know, they've seen other jobs, other corporations leave their hometown, they've been laid off. And I was really impressed and got an education on the cluster and how important that is to have a cluster of similar type companies for to be able to have one succeed more and attract more people. So I think you use the word execution, and we are all at the execution phase. I mean, that's really exciting, whether it's OEV, Innovation Park, the recruitment efforts, all these things. But having Paul, you here, Ricardo, you actually stepping up and chairing the task force, I think that has been a critical link, because when it was just city, county, or EDC trying to think through how to recruit, we weren't doing it as well. We needed all these other voices at the table. So I think that's been a critical component and helped us get more progress in the last, I'd say, 3-4 years than we've ever seen. So thank you for that. It's very important. Exciting.
No, I think Paul being part of the board is very important. That so Paul bring our needs, our vision, our thinking, and we'd like to see more private sector part of these discussions and being part of this. We're just missing to bring more companies here. So mm-hmm. We, as long as we succeeded to have other companies participating on the decision making process, like you guys have. It's very important to this and the private sector. Make sure that we have our voice.
Ricardo, can you share with us to some extent as to the mission, focus, the areas that the expansion will be working on?
We have, let's say, the next phase. We just finished the renovation of our R&D. If you see, if you walk to the factory, we have today a brand new facilities to be able to support our new development, new products that we are bringing to the market. We invested, how much Paul was the total for the R&D, was close to $1.8 million in infrastructure. So we have the new offices that are going to be built on the parking lot as we have today. And this is going to be able to host additional 120 seats that we are planning to fill for our own needs in Danfoss Turbocor. But also Danfoss is hosting more and more people here. Mm-hmm. Because the other collaboration that we want to do, and we have in Danfoss Turbocor something that is unique in Danfoss in respect of the culture of innovation. It's people are sending more people here to be educated by our teams to how to innovate. So we have been through a kind of a startup phase many years ago at Danfoss Turbocor. In 2008, a lot of people do not realize just after the opening of this factory, we were on the edge of bankruptcy. We are kind of really financially in a very, very bad situation. So So, and we have to rethink about our innovation culture and our execution culture to balance. You're just innovating, you're not executing anything. So, and with our success, let's say, of balancing innovation execution, we became a reference on the Danfoss Group. So they're sending more people here for R&D, for innovation, collaboration across the different businesses that we have in Danfoss. So it's going to grow not only with our own needs in Danfoss Superform, but it's going to grow across all the Danfoss different segments. So this is kind of what we see, a tremendous opportunity in our community, because we have CAPS, that is the Power Electronics Center for FSU. There are capabilities that you cannot find in any other place before. You can simulate, for example, Danfoss is on the core of this electrification of mobile. For example, ferries in Europe used to be all powered by internal combustion motors. In the future, most of the ferries are going to be run by electrical. So if you look at agricultural equipment, Danfoss is the largest mobile agricultural supplier for mobile, for hydraulic systems. We have seen now tractors running in all of Europe fully electrical. So you use renewable energy to power batteries and run tractors out of internal combustion motors. They are self-driven tractors. The farmers, they don't have any more people in the field. So all of this, let's say, is related with electrification of heating and agriculture. And we have right here one of the best labs in the world for testing some of these the things that we want to have. So there's tremendous potential in this community. We just need to connect the dots. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're trying.
The founding family of the company was here several months ago, maybe a half a year or so ago, and it was impressive to see the confidence they have in Ricardo and what has been accomplished here in this community. It was impressive that they made that announcement for the expansion shortly thereafter. Ricardo, we appreciate the things that you do. Are there things that we need to be doing more to support you and your program?
Well, again, we are very pleased to be here. I made a decision 3 years ago. I have been moving in 4 different countries, a lot of different cities, and we are so welcome in this community that we decided to make Tallahassee our home. So we are not going anywhere. So I cannot be more happy to help the community that I have decided to. Hopefully they get retired. Enjoy my retirement, but let's say it's my obligation to help the community. So Paul is here representing Danfoss in this board. And please make sure that you listen carefully to what Paul is saying, because let's say the private sector needed to have a voice to make sure that the growth, let's say, government can create infrastructure, but the growth has to come from creating value to customers. Mm-hmm. That's what we do, private sector, create a value to customers that we need to pay for. So as long as we can create value to our customers, we'll grow. And the public sector has a mission to support and grow for our community and business. So thank you all. Paul will take care to make sure that you see the factory, the facilities, and if you have any other questions, you're welcome to contact Paul.
We're very pleased that you have enabled Paul to serve and given him the time to be supportive here as well. He adds a lot of value to our organization. So thank you, Paul. Thank you, Ricardo.
Yeah, we have great leaders in this company, and I see Paul is one of them. Some people don't understand, let's say, that the guy that has designed this product back in Australia in 92. It's our VP, a VP of R&D and technology. He's still working here, Dr. Lin Sun. So he's probably more famous in around the world than he's not a norm in Tallahassee, but we have a group of leaders that are outstanding in that position.
Very impressive to walk through your workforce and see the number of multicultural people here from all nationalities. Do you know how many nationalities are working here?
We have 27 different nationalities here. Hmm. There's another thing, let's say, that when we talk about innovation technology, let's say for us to succeed and be the number one as we are today and the biggest in the world, we have to bring the people out the best in the world. So our pool of talents is not Florida, is not the U.S. We go and find the people that are the best of the best. Doesn't matter where they are. Let's say if we build the best team, you're going to get a great results. And let's say another thing is the collective intelligence is extremely powerful. Diversity, not only from background or agenda or thinking. So we have to have a diversity in all the different elements. That is the characteristics of the most innovative companies. If you're all the same, you're not going to be as innovative as a pool of people that are completely different. So we try to hire people that sometimes are not easy to manage. Because they are the insurgents, they are the disruptive people. But that is the beauty, because we needed to be bringing people that are not only thinking like this. I'm an engineer by education. So I say, if you all bring engineers here, it's going to be so boring. So we have to bring the diversity together.
How many employees in the new facility?
So we have seats for 120. So it's going to take a while to fill these 120 seats. But I say, it's piling up very fast. Paul is running out of space now. How many open jobs we have all now?
Almost 30.
Of the 120 new jobs, what's the sort of education requirement? Is it everything from four-year degrees, PhDs, no degrees?
Most of them will be related with engineering, science, Internet of Things.
So the upper side of education.
Mathematicians for data analytics. So this is the type of workforce that you will probably see more and more required in our industry. So in being close to a university with a pool of so many talents, that's very important to us. I think 20% of our engineering community today are coming from our industry partner, from grad students to PhDs. So most of these jobs are going to be around engineering, science. So the manufacturing are not going to grow as much as the R&D and engineering side, because the new technologies in manufacturing, you see a different kind of manufacturing. So we look, let's say, more automation, we look more computer-driven processes. So even in the floor, we are going to be more and more focused on college people. So it's a different kind of manufacturing. What we see today here is very obsolete. So I invite you to come back in 2020. We are going to have our new production lines in place. And if you look what we have a factory now in China. Our factory in China is kind of a big step. What we have here. Let's say fully automated is Internet of Things. We can collect data, all of the processes. And we will need a lot of high quality, high educated people. That's what I'm looking
for. Well, there it is, the next step.
Yeah, probably it's going to have some reduction because we just reviewed the budget. probably a lot of people still went up 15%.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because of some of the training issues that we are dealing with. So we have also, let's say, the labor. How much labor went up now?
10% of the last year.
10%, there's so much construction going on in town. Let's say that the labor good for people getting more money, but it's for someone that has a budget. So we probably need to do some change on our design to reduce some costs. But that's the goal that we want to fill the parking lot with the new facility.
Questions of Ricardo? Ricardo, we thank you for being with us. Thank you for hosting us today. We appreciate Paul giving us a tour a little bit later on.
Yeah.
You are a great partner.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Okay, Incubation Acceleration Program Development. We call upon Michael to give us a report. Michael, you have the floor.
Thank you. I was hoping Tim could give the report. He was pretty enthusiastic on a grander scale. I'm coming down to our specific project, which is not necessarily this, but I was hoping for a rendering by now. As you can see, this is a three-story. Maybe Ricardo would be interested in it. But we're looking for that high-tech look. It's going to be a one-story facility, and everything that I've done up to this point after 4.5 months is to help fill this facility when built. So just to go through what we've been doing is we're creating space and programs that inspire and cultivate innovation within the scientific, engineering, and other technological communities. And the reason why I want everyone here to know that is because I'm getting some comments in the community that we're duplicating effort. There's other technology incubators out there, which I don't necessarily agree with, but there's other places to go for this kind of activity. We're focusing primarily or specifically on scientific engineering, and I'm going to catch all phrase other technologies in the basic sciences that are taking advantage of the assets that we have in the park. The other thing I wanted you to look at, and it's hard for me to move in this corner, but is the SBIRS TTR training. You've heard a lot about the training that has been, I think, lacking in the community. Now we're starting to build a pipeline of training in SBIRS TTRs. I could give you stats on Florida. I have them if anyone wants to know, but we're not doing very well as a state, and in particular, not so well in Tallahassee. So that was the first thing I started focusing on. And we did do an FSU-sponsored SBIR STTR training class. We had 14 folks come to that training. It was an hour-long session on basics of SBIR STTRs that I did, and then there was a panel discussion with the Office of Commercialization at FSU that did the next hour of Q&A. It was pretty interactive. We held it over at CAPS, and I think that's just the start. I'm building a program now for FAMU as well, under the REACH program. And I've also talked with TCC, with the Innovation Center that they have downtown, to start doing some of this activity as well. And all of that is so that we can start at the very early stage of building the pipeline to fill the incubator. So the way the continuum goes is SBIRSTTR phase one is the conceptual phase. Do you have something that actually may work out? Phase two is, okay, let's do a prototype. Phase three is when they would segue into a facility to help nurture them along as they build out an actual business from that basic science and thesis. So that's why we're starting with SBIRs, TTRs. The rest is self-explanatory. So what have I done in the last 4.5 months? Building the pipeline, met with many community leaders and entrepreneurs. I've already been involved with 3 business plan competitions. One was statewide in the Governor's Cup, and 2 others, including our own tech grant, in a business plan competition. We've offered the SBIRS TTR training, and again, we had the 14 folks. That was the very first one. It was short notice. We're planning another one in the fall, and I hope to do one at least every quarter to start building that pipeline. And then we hosted an NSF I-Corps program where we brought people from the University of Alabama out, who represents the Southern, what they call a node of I-Corps. And we had 14 teams that were interested in that training program. 6 were selected to be in attendance, and it's sort of I-Corps light, if you will. It's not the national program. It's to get you ready for I-Corp, which is Innovation Corps from NSF. And out of those six teams, we had five that were committed, I'll say, because it's a long process. And out of those five, I'm thinking two may be recommended to the National I-Corp training at Georgia Tech, which comes with a $50,000 grant to offset the cost of attending. So once again, that's starting from the infancy stage, trying to build up into critical mass so that we have prospects when our doors open in a year or so. And then I presented at a couple of meetings listed there. Pipeline events, a lot of events have been happening. There's a lot of enthusiasm in town, a lot of things going on. I won't read them all, but these were some of the events that I participated in. I'm very happy to be partners with FSU, FAMU, TCC, and others. Excuse me. There's the partners. So Office of Tech Commercialization at FSU has been very supportive of what we're trying to do. In fact, I just learned today that they're building a website to represent SBIRs, TTRs based on the training that we did for them. Office of Tech Transfer, I guess I can't talk to Tim directly since he left. Working with the TCC Center of Workforce Development and also the Innovation Center downtown. And then the others that are listed here, as well as the Office of Economic Vitality. So these are some of the folks that have been very engaged in the activities that we're doing. And working with General Pastor and Dan Foss in various capacities. And then one of the things that I've been building is because we don't have a facility and we don't have the entrepreneurs to fill it right now, what I am building is the mentor network. And so the mentors, I've got 42 listed there. The mentors are folks that are either in the community or even nationwide that can assist folks with their scientific discoveries. So SBIR, SBTR experts, program officers at various agencies, contracting officers, a lot of those are there. I have a list if anyone's interested in who I have so far, and I'm looking for more. So what's the next steps? I'm in the middle of talking with EDA on a rather large ask to build our new facility. It's estimated to be about 15 to 20,000, so I kind of split it and said, okay, 17.5.
Million.
I say thousands all the time. Million, thank you. And I think we're pretty accurate based on what Tim said, the new building that they're building is going to be $48 million. So we're looking at this EDA proposal. In fact, they're actually asking us, they're kind of pulling the information from us rather than us going and begging to them, because we don't have all the ducks in the row, if you will. I need commitments from our various partners to write support letters, and I need a lot of things that I'm starting to accumulate now in that effort. Then there's something called the FATS Partnership Program. That grant is $125,000 a year up to 5 years, and I'm thinking we're pretty good going forward on that one, although there's a very short time frame, so I've been quite busy trying to get all of that stuff done because there's a lot of documentation, as you might imagine. And then we're working with FAMU REACH Program, which is also SBIR, STTR related, and we're just about to sign that grant coming up very soon. So also in the meantime, what we're doing is working on the virtual incubation services. I've created a list of services for those folks not physically housed in our absent facility now. So we're going to be starting to offer that probably come late summer, fall. And it'll be basically the same services you would receive in a physical incubator without being physically housed there. So we'll be starting that up pretty soon. Also, I had discussions with some folks over at the Joint FAMU-FSU College of Engineering who are looking at naval contracts over in Pensacola, and they're looking to expand those contracts. And because my past experience has been heavily involved in the defense arena, I was talking to them about some unique strategies as trying to maybe broker some university expertise with naval contracts. Now, that's not the primary focus of why I'm here, but because I happen to have a background in that area, I've been talking closely with them about that. And that strengthens that partnership I'm talking about, because I need the support of the various higher educational institutions. We've also started something in the conceptual phase, Denise and I, on SBIR-STTR speed dating. And basically what that is one of the complaints I've heard from the scientists and engineers is SBIR-STTR, and again, I know I said it last time, but there's small business innovation research and small business tech transfer research has to have a small business component in it. Yet it's a lot of the higher education institutions' professorial ideas that go after these grants. Well, without a small business partner, you can't do it because it's an SBA small business initiative. So what I'm doing now is trying to create not only a speed dating event, but also a matchmaking database of small businesses around the area primarily, but also throughout the country. I've already matched one FSU initiative with the New York State small business that'll help out with that SBIR, and that's again from some of the past lives that I've done.
Do they just have to be certified small businesses?
They do.
Certified by the federal government?
Not under any particular program certification like 8A or anything like that.
Okay.
It's a self-determination, but
okay,
they will do their due diligence.
Sure.
And basically it's under 500 employees.
Yeah.
And so almost everybody qualifies for that.
Mm-hmm.
Although I did run into one that is a subsidiary of a much larger corporation that didn't qualify when I did some matchmaking for them. So that happens. Mm-hmm. Working on the second part of SBIR-STTRs, which is the government proposal response seminar, that's going to be actually how do you construct a proposal back to the solicitation, because you can talk all you want about what's out there, but if you don't know how to accurately respond to those solicitations, your chances go way down. Also doing the Entrepreneurial Excellence Program in the fall, taking over for Larry Lynch. Heard lots of great things about it. Looking forward to really firing that one up and starting to work on getting the volunteers to attend that program in the fall. I think we came up with a preliminary date of October 2nd to launch it, partially because that's what worked out in our spread for other events. I was hoping for September, it's not gonna work, so we're doing it in October. And then in development, I'm looking at tech vets. I really don't have a lot of time based on the other activities going on, but that's one of the programs I've offered before, which is basically technology for veterans. And I would like to key it up still. And then something that I call the Cyber Teeny, which was very successful up in the Maryland area when we had a lot of cyber companies starting to talk to TCC and FAMU about their cyber activities and maybe start launching the Cyber Teeny events. And I'll tell you more about that if you're interested. Started to create the list for what goes into our new facility, because one of the differentiation strategies is that we're going to have equipment and machines and space that is, again, cultivating that entrepreneurial spirit with scientists, engineers, and other technologists. And then I'm working on the budget for the facility as well. And then here's the major stakeholders. And because Ron tells me that I should have an ask every time I do these things, the stakeholders are listed here, and this is what the estimated funds look like. And you notice there's nothing put in here because that's what I'm working on next. We've got to figure out who can support us and in what capacity. It doesn't always have to be monetary, but that would be nice. But that's what I'm looking to do, because I'm thinking that we have approximately a little less than $7 million to try to accumulate so we can move forward with the grant application at EDA. And again, they're chomping at the bit. They want to give it to us. And so it's just a matter of trying to justify the match. And so that's what I'm looking for. So, yes, ma'am.
I'm sorry, Michael. Do we have to have that match secured completely before putting in the application? I thought some commitments, we can get started when we have some initiated, or what's your sense of that in past experience?
So we do have to have it in theory committed, meaning a letter of support,
yeah,
not physically in the bank.
Okay.
So it's a yes and no answer. We have to have some
a legal obligation.
That
a commitment.
We don't have to have the firm legal obligation secured prior to applying for the grant.
Because it's contingent on the grant, they wouldn't have to commit it unless we
were
awarded
the
dollars.
Yes, we don't get the grant,
then
they don't.
Okay.
And they really like cash.
Yeah, yeah.
They actually do, but working with our representative in Atlanta, he gave me some rather creative ways to address that.
Yeah.
And he's been excellent in giving me lots of hints and tips to get it approved, because again, I have the feeling he really wants to give it to us. So I just have to manage all of that as we move forward. It's big money, and I'll get the thousands out of my head and start talking about the millions.
We got to keep pushing forward, because they're on our radar from ACE and a number of other things, and yeah, it's good.
Yeah, and Greg Bidet actually was here. We met over at downtown, and he, like I said, gave me a lot of good tips that they're just ready. But, I mean, this is huge, right? So.
Is the intention that we essentially try to see what we can garner from partners before we start having the conversation about what skin in the game we ourselves need to put in from reserves or otherwise?
So I'm actually looking here first at private donors and public-private partnerships before I go and figure out the ask. But certainly the support from all of the stakeholders is necessary, because the skin in the game is going to define the services we provide and for what outcomes, right?
I meant our skin in the game, our money.
Innovation Park.
Yeah.
Well, we hadn't quite gotten there yet. Our skin in the game is pretty much the land and me, and I'm not sure we have the funds to do anything else, so there's a lot that's going.
But I think you should add that to your slide, that LCRDA has already committed X amount, the value of what we are committing, because that's a starting point.
Oh, absolutely. And in the proposal, that certainly is in there, because they need to see that as the host for the award.
Yeah. And this is the construction cost. I mean, Innovation Parks, skin in the game is to make this successful, not the operations, the staffing, managing the facility ongoing. No one wants to put up money if you can't sustain the building long term.
Certainly the value of the land.
The value of land, everything else is certainly part of that. I didn't mean to skip over that.
Oh, that's built in.
But the operations and staffing in the future, that's a critical component to prove that we can do that if we got support to build the facility.
I think as we talk about it publicly, it helps to say LCRDA has already committed this value for land and staffing, and put that front and center, because that's a big chunk.
And it's also probably just made me think some more about this. It's also noteworthy to say that if we get the building built with no debt service through these various sources, it's a lot easier to be self-sustaining, obviously, right? But because of the size of the facility at 40,000 square, rental rates will cover the cost. It'll offset some of the cost of personnel, but certainly the operating expenses for the building going forward.
And how many acres do you need from this park?
285. It's going to be huge. I have no idea. I'm looking at minimum 1.5 to 2 acres in order to build a footprint like that on one level and the parking necessary.
And one of the things that he's working on is the formal pitch to go to the partners and say, here's what we need. He'll put a whole pitch proposal together that will cover all of those bases. So.
Have you, in looking at the list of potential contributors, given some thought or maybe had some preliminary discussions with anyone relative to the capacity? In other words, is it possible to get $6.75 million from those players, and perhaps, at least in your mind, assign some target number for each of them?
In my mind, yes. A public
no. You've got some strategy to get to $6.75 million.
Only my strategy. The partners would have to help me with that and get a more firm figures on what's reasonable and realizable. And I don't know that any of it is. That's what I'm working out now.
Well, I think part of that, Eric, is across the board we're going to see a lot of political change this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, the relationship with the state, for example, the $85 million or whatever that was in the Florida
growth grant fund. I always get that wrong.
Job growth grant fund.
Yeah, it's the most cumbersome name in the world, and that's saying something for government. Who knows what's going to change next spring? So I think TN, a lot of this stuff is really good, but I would guess we'd have be hard-pressed to get commitments from some folks who are reliant on state dollars in the next 6 months. Is that fair to say? Or I mean, I think laying the groundwork, I think starting the pitch is good. We have to do that. But next session is going to tell us a lot.
Is there a mechanism for the city and county to put in a decent amount of money for something like this?
We're currently working through our five-year projections on the sales tax. We have several commitments that we have to make to the airport and to the convention center, first and foremost, with that funding. So that's something we're all actively working on as we speak.
And that's a reason why you don't see any numbers here, because I don't have any commitments, and I don't really have the full ask, because I'm trying to offset that with private money and also with other grants that are out there, like a disaster relief grant, which is huge, but it's hard to do it here in Tallahassee because of all the other devastation around the state.
And I'll give a different answer, Eric. Christina's correct, working through the budget. I think there would be the political will to do something, depending on the budget, but we're going to have a third of the blueprint board turnover by November as well. So I think that is just something to keep in mind, at least the third also. So I think September is when Ben has talked about coming back with some budget numbers and things like that. Is that about right?
That's about right, yeah. Those are things that we're actively looking on, and seeing this presentation today is certainly helpful as we plan outwards, but it's, you know, obviously this is talked about a lot in our the analysis that we did with the incubator and accelerator program, something that we work with a lot of our partners. There's a lot of needs in our entrepreneurial community that we're working with to build that and build that into our plan as we move forward too. So it's helpful to get, you know, routine updates from our partners too and what they're expecting as well, so we can build that into our program.
So a lot of things have to take place simultaneously in order to fill in the blanks. That's part of what I'm working on as well.
And Eric, can I ask you, if, in terms of timing for university commitments, this time frame, it seems like you guys are putting together your legislative requests for next year, and when do you have those to the governor, do you know?
It's kind of an ongoing process, and it will continue to be worked on, refined up until the moment the legislature starts to
meet.
So I don't think there's necessarily a good time, but then by the same token, there's not a bad time.
Yeah.
So and there's multiple sources of funds for this sort of thing. It's just a matter of priorities and
you know,
advertising it.
Right.
And so one of the main things, April, is to get that pitch together so I can have some of those answers when I go to the door.
Yeah.
You know, make them up.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
Is the question you started out with where you said, I think you've had people saying to you, this is a duplication of stuff that's already, is there a two-sentence answer to that, that for instance somebody like me could?
Our focus is on scientific engineering and other technological innovation occurring with the assets in the park.
Occurring with the assets in the park.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
I think a lot of people look at DOMI or whatever and go, that's exactly what they're doing. It's not.
Michael, it's fair to say there is not this kind of facility between Pensacola and U.S. Or, I mean, Jackson.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty much. I mean, there's nothing like this.
Oh, absolutely true. And I think as you see some of these programs start to develop, you'll see more activity in the SBIR, SDTR, more activity in the defense arena and the College of Engineering, more activities that really help to show the benefit to the various institutions and other stakeholders here. And I think as we start to create the businesses, because this is a three-year effort, by the time you get an SBIR 1 and then a 2 into the 2, which is 1.5 million at that point, and then into the 3 ask, you know, we're really talking about a three-year effort before you start to see it pay off. But I think you're going to start to see it pay off, and we've gotten early wins already.
Michael, I want to thank you for the leadership you're providing. You're giving us that opportunity now to take the priorities that we've tried to lay out and work on. I want to thank Ann before she leaves. I want to thank Kristen for getting us to this step right here. Now, we place an awful lot of responsibility in your hands, but run hard, run fast.
Well, I appreciate it, and the support I'm getting out of both offices of technology and commercialization and tech transfer has been tremendous. And FSU, because it was our test bed for the SBIR, we didn't even advertise it, and we got 14 people, right? So now I'm working with FAMU to start a similar thing, then we're going to open it up to the community. I think that traction is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And even the I-Corps stuff, 14 teams had an interest in I-Corps, and again, that wasn't widely publicized. And the University of Alabama Southern Node of I-Corps was so happy with the quality of the teams that were there that they want to keep pushing. In fact, they even talked about developing an I-Corps node here as a result. So, you know, a lot of real positive things happening, and certainly I couldn't do it without all of your support, so I appreciate that.
Hey, Michael, just one question.
Yes, sir.
In your budget you have, when are you planning on, when would you like to be go live on this build? What year was
well,
that?
If we go back to the first screenshot of the building, it said grand opening 2019. That's pretty optimistic.
Wait, the reason I'm asking you, we just encountered this situation here, I think Ricardo referred to it, is that prices. Right now prices are going up.
Yeah.
So make sure you have contingency in there, built in there, because right now we're seeing a 5% increase a year that we need to bake in.
Yeah,
unless something stops.
Great comment, and that's why I said the spread between 15 and 20, because if I can hit a nice even mark, I can scale down like you might have to do now, based on those inflated rates.
Yeah.
So thank you, great comment. So the realistic answer is 25. Okay. Other questions?
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it very much. At this point in time, I'll call on Ron and I guess council to discuss a little bit about the nonprofit organization discussion.
Well, I have a nice PowerPoint I'd love to show you.
I have to take ownership of this. I kicked the plug just before our meeting started at 10:59, and it hasn't worked since. So, my apologies.
So I'll just kind of walk you through this.
Sorry.
That's fine. And you can.
We like it this way. We're going to stare at Ron.
Yeah.
I did offer to kick it again, but he was not impressed.
Yeah.
Well, now that Paul's gone, you can do whatever you want. It's his stuff. In the executive committee meeting, we talked a little bit about forming a 501c3 to support the incubator acceleration programs and facilities. And there were a lot of questions from the committee about the structure, and it seemed like one of the biggest concerns was how do we maintain control of that organization. So they sent me back to Melissa to get some more answers, and I'm glad Melissa's here because she can help fill in the blanks here. But you know, I think the first question is, why do we need a 501c3? And really it comes down to the fact that even though we can take contributions from the public directly into LCRDA and have it be tax deductible as if it was a charitable contribution, there are lots of organizations that require their donations go to a 501c3 specifically. So then you also have a lot of companies that have automated their process of going after grant funding, and they automatically go check the 501c3 status before they'll make a donation. Others may have philosophical issues about donating to a government entity, whereas they may not have that same concern about a 501c3. And then the other issue is that the 501c3 would not be subject to sunshine laws, and therefore they could maintain their anonymity if they chose to with their donation. Those are just some of the issues. It's also an opportunity to bring in additional people into a board that will oversee the 501c3 that maybe have some specific expertise related to incubation acceleration. So one of the things we're working on right now is in terms of trying to create the 501c3 is getting the charitable actual verbiage for the charitable purpose such that it will meet the IRS requirements. And it has to be in the organizing documents The application for the 501c3 actually references that. You have to tell it what page and section, and it's got to be worded just right. So we're working on that, trying to find some good examples that will that have already passed muster on previous applications, and particularly language that fits with the kind of incubator that we're looking at. On the control side, one of the things that we talked about is how can we use agreements between the two entities, between LCRDA and this 501c3, to make sure that we have sufficient control. Now, I'm going to talk in a minute about something that Melissa came up with that is a particular type of 501c3 that does give us the kind of control that we're looking for. But outside of that, we are going to have several agreements between the two organizations. For example, there'll be a building lease. So presumably, LCRDA will own the building and lease it back to the 501c3. That's how some of the funds will flow. There can be restrictions and covenants put into these documents that require them to behave a certain way, or we can, you know, cancel the lease. And obviously, if it came down to it, we could do that. Now, obviously, we're not going to, but at least it gives us some levers. The same, we'll have an operating agreement, which will be basically leasing staff from LCRDA to the nonprofit, Michael in particular. But we could even charge for services for staff, other staff that can provide support to the 501c3. It could be a license agreement. There was a concern that we're proposing the name of the entity to be Innovation Park TLH Inc. Not necessarily to be the name of the incubator. There'll be obviously a DBA, but we'd like to have some time to think about from a brand perspective what that might look like, but at least from a bland corporate name, it seems to work. So the concern is could the 501c3 do something to disparage the Innovation Park name? And we could create a license agreement on the use of that name, and if they did anything to disparage it, we could basically cancel the license. And then also we'll need a loan agreement. There'll need to be some initial funding to pay for, fees for a corporation and, getting insurance set up a bank account, those sort of things. So we can do a loan agreement to get those funds paid back. So some of the issues we're faced with right now is we really need to get this organization created so that we can get moving forward and have the opportunity to apply for grants in the name of the 501c3. The IRS application process takes time. And again, we talked about the control issues. We talked about the sunshine. So the type of organization that Melissa came up with, it's called a 509A3 supporting organization. And there are three different types of these organizations, and it looks like there are two of them that would apply to what we're talking about doing. And really, the two options are sort of a parent-subsidiary type relationship between LCRDA and the nonprofit, in which this board would appoint or elect all of the, you could do either all or a majority of the directors of the 501c3. So you'd have that control in terms of who got elected as a board member. And then you also have the brother-sister type relationship in which a majority of the directors and trustees of the supported organization so the majority of these board members would serve as the board of the nonprofit. One of the issues with that is, putting all of our board members in a room together. Right. Now we're back under sunshine.
Mm-hmm. That would seem like a big obstacle.
That is, yeah, it does.
Even just the gathering before the meetings,
Right. I think sunshine is that'd be too hard.
Yeah, and you're also going to have, in particular with these four agreements, you're going to have discussion on both sides. So the board members on the nonprofit will have to discuss it, and then the board members for LCRDA will have to discuss it. Now, all of that's going to be under sunshine anyway, but that's kind of an example.
The staff have a recommendation on this.
Yeah, I'm going to get to that. I had some pretty slides, but we'll put it soon. Now, the supporting organization is still going to be subject to all the same kind of requirements of other public charities. There's just not really a different layer. There was a question about direct support organizations and whether or not that would make sense. This is actually, I think, a better setup than a DSO. DSOs are governed by state statute. From my investigation, Melissa's still taking a look at it, but from my investigation, there's a whole other layer of regulation and compliance that you've got to go through. It just doesn't look like it's worth the effort to do that if we can accomplish the same thing, basically, with this type of organization. So my recommendation is that we set up the bylaws, and again, Innovation Park Tallahassee, to reflect the 509A3 Type 1 support organization being the parent-subsidiary relationship. That the LCRDA board appoints all of the nonprofit board members, that the board structure mimics the LCRDA structure but with different people appointed. So you would still have representatives from FSU, FAMU, TCC, city, county, and six private sector. My recommendation would be that the LCRDA board chair and the executive director of LCRDA, me, serve on that board as well. There would be a total of 13 members. And then have the director of entrepreneurship, Michael, serve as the executive director of the nonprofit. And principally because that will be the main operating entity for the incubator.
Clarification, Ron. Yeah. How many of these board members would sit on that board?
One.
Just one. Okay, got it.
Eventually. And I'll get to the transition piece here in a second. And then we'll implement the control measures as permitted under the 509A3 organizations. I don't have all of those understood completely just yet. But then if necessary, and to the extent it's necessary, put the additional controls that we may need in those agreements, in the lease and operating agreement and so on. I'm asking to set up the initial board, have the originating documents. In order to take the next steps that we need to do, we need to get the initial board set up, and it has to be a minimum of three people. I'm recommending that it be myself and the board chair and the treasurer, Dave and April. I'm asking that you make me the chair and president, not because of my ego, but because it gives me the power to execute the documents that need to happen and get this thing moving along and not have to chase folks down to get it done. Any agreements that we would do for the nonprofit would still have to be approved by the LCRDA board because they're going to be a party to those agreements. So, you know, we wouldn't be doing that. We'd get them drafted and get that process going, but it'd still all come back here. I'm asking to prepare and submit the 501c3 application, to set up bank accounts, financial controls, insurance, and, you know, the general business operating processes and procedures for the 501c3, and then to start the process of recruiting additional board members for appointment consideration by the LCRDA board.
But again, it won't be a 501c3.
Yes.
It will be.
That's just a sub.
The 509A3 is a type of 501C3.
Got it. I was going to, okay. Thank you.
Yes, I had to Google that this morning to find out. So the initial structure would be the three board members, or the two board members, April, Dave, and myself, with Michael as the executive director. Then the continuing board would be the three officers pulled from the 13 members, myself, the board chair, and then the same representation we have here.
All right, Ron, you've done a very good job, I think, of first summarizing the very lengthy discussion we had in the executive committee, and then responding to the concerns we had by preparing some recommendations. So, well, thank you for getting that on the table. Now, opening the floor for questions or comments.
I have a question more from the previous chairs in terms of the amount of time required for Innovation Park for chairing that board, and then also chairing the incubator. What are your thoughts about that?
April, I'm on the same page. I actually wrote down vice chair.
That's what I wrote down.
Yeah, because I do think the chair of our board has a lot to do with for signing documents, financing, everything like that. But it also could be good experience for the vice chair to be chair of that board as they prepare to be chair of LCRDA board. So I was on the same.
I do think Dave is the right guy right now, but I think for the long term, it would be a nice succession. You know, so you're learning a lot about the incubator, and then you're moving into the chair.
And it could be the chair or his designee from the board.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it.
It can only be one person from the board, though, at
any given
time. You cannot have the chair and the vice chair on there simultaneously. Otherwise, you're in violation of sunshine coming back to this meeting.
Could we do the chair and the treasurer then? That would be the same.
Initial.
I mean, we could do it initially.
Okay, gotcha.
And basically, I think we would have to treat it under sunshine for the initial process, but it would just be the three of us.
Yeah.
So we notice the meetings and record them and all that.
Yeah.
Question.
Can we talk a little bit about what, after this all gets set up, what would a meeting of the 501c3 board look like? Because the nonprofit is not going to be running the park or running the incubator even, or is it going to be running the incubator?
So what has been done in the past is the board of the incubator helps select the people that would come into the facility, so they're part of a selection committee. So they would create the standards for entry, and then they would oversee, any kind of, let me back up. In the beginning, they would usually meet once a month until the building is done and things are starting to run smoothly, and then they segue typically into once every quarter. And then really, a lot of times, there isn't anything else necessary if you have the confidence in the executive director, but initially it's typically selecting the folks that come in. And I'll tell you the reason why is because when you have criteria to come in to an incubator, you don't want it to sit up with one person making the determination. So the board is necessary for two reasons. One, it's a legal requirement, and two, it gives an excuse for the executive director to pawn it off on the board so someone object to them not being put in.
Sure.
That's really the basic role. Because there's a parent organization, the rest of the roles kind of go away, because that would be expenditures, that would be contracts, all of those things that would be handled at the LCRDA side.
Yeah, so that's exactly what I'm getting to. So receive money, donated money, I guess decide what to do with that money if the money is received.
Probably not going to be a lot of decision because it would be running the facility once it's built.
But it could, I'm sorry, and if I can remember, it would be oversight and maybe advocacy for those funds.
General
to come
oversight
in.
And advocacy.
It would be approving a grant application or
approving the budget.
Looking for a way to do something and then approving the budget, but there would be one dedicated reason for raising those funds. So that's what you're saying, Michael, is that you're not getting into the weeds on this program or that program. It's all for the incubator.
Right, because I can give examples versus the big money is CRA money from local banks, Community Reinvestment Act money from banks. That would be a function of the director, executive director, whatever it's called. And then program sponsorships, sponsoring a lunch or an event. I would think that wouldn't be a board decision either, but that's what you write up in the document.
And I think in this relationship, given this supporting organization structure, I think this board can kind of dictate how much, and this is what we're going to try to find out, is what that control allows us to do.
Yeah.
But I get the impression from what I've read so far that this board can say, here are the parameters under which you can operate. Here's the decisions that you can make. Anything outside of that has to come back to us, or anything that you decide, we have to ratify. Is that
Does it seem fair?
That's and I think that covers some of the concern that we discussed in the executive committee is that we don't want it to be just two separate organizations going independently of one another.
Yeah.
It had to be some cohesiveness, it had to be some direction actually, and some accountability.
Well, and I don't mean to throw a wrench in this because Melissa knows, and Ron, everybody now knows much more about this than I do, but I have been mulling this since our executive committee meeting and wondering if there wasn't really a way to simply have this board or a subset of it be the board of the nonprofit. And I mean, when everybody says sunshine, sunshine, I have a feeling that could be cured in very, you're shaking your head.
In my humble opinion here, Melissa could verify that, but we can't talk about anything that might ever come up for a vote on this board outside of a publicly noticed meeting. So the only cure would be having sunshine rules applied to that board. That's kind of where I was going.
Because the connection to make it meaningful is going to be so tight anyway, you know. If you have the ability to control what, you know, or pull board members, appoint board members, it's getting pretty thin. And maybe that's exactly what a 509A3 is supposed to be for. I get that. But it's also going to be clunky. It's still, I think, going to be quite a bit of motion back and forth. So it's kind of like, and then there is the... how you could have the one board be more people, but still contain the whole board. The idea of getting people who are interested enough to be good partners and make it work actually concerns me too. Mm. You know, it's something we've seen here, getting the people you want on the board, getting them to come to the meetings, you know, making it so you can really run it. So if it comes down to, you know, a sunshine thing, and I'm kind of like, well, that, why not? Now, the one thing I heard was we might have contributors who wanted to be confidential. As a public entity, it's possible you have problems with that from the get-go. I don't know.
Not from what we've read, that if you keep the organization separate.
Yeah.
Now, I think if you start commingling all this, I think, yeah, you got a problem. But can I add something to what you had to say?
Yeah.
Just, you heard the comment already about even just having the board chair, you know, be on the board. Now you're asking the rest of the board to add this other responsibility on top. And in terms of getting other people to be on that board, mm-hmm. I think it's going to be easier than to get people on this board.
I was going to just say that in my past experience, that's never been a problem because they want to be where the activity is creating new entrepreneurial businesses and they want to be part of it. And so I have the opposite problem.
Okay.
It's limiting mm-hmm. the amount of folks that are on that board.
Well, and there is the opportunity, too, for people who rotate off of this board and are
true.
Really interested.
Yeah. Well, I think that'd be a great,
or want to rotate
yeah,
on
I
the
think
future.
That'd be a yeah. great source.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
Feedback and forth.
Mm-hmm.
But
former board members.
A lot of the board members end up being your primary mentors as well. And again, they're there because they want to be there and help these entrepreneurs. And so it's more that I have too many.
And as a matter of fact, one of the things I've heard from others I've talked to who have had similar concerns about keeping the control is one in particular said, well, he just stocked his 501c3 board with prior board members from his government board. So
there's lots of ways.
Because they get it. So
and second question is just, do we know anybody who has done one of these, a 509A3?
Not in this context.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure we...
I just learned about it this morning.
Yeah, but we didn't ask.
Okay. Well.
I will say this, because I've been associated with the NBIA, I called one of the board members, and they're actively looking for
great.
A sample for
me. Great.
And would we believe corporate contributors that require a 501c3 would acknowledge or recognize that the 509a3 is complementary to that.
They wouldn't even know.
It's a subset.
It's I think it's okay. Just that's between us and the IRS.
Okay.
As long as they get their certificate that they can write it off,
yeah,
they're good.
On the
they
list.
don't really care which.
Kristen, you have questions or comments?
Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you. But yeah. I'm glad that you guys chimed in on the recruitment. I actually see this opposite. I will say, and I know this is going to come up in a few minutes, but just in the last month, I think three people have expressed interest to me personally in this board, which this is the second cycle now that it is dramatically different than anything we experienced.
That's right.
For the six, you know, for the 5 years before or so. We were pulling teeth to get people to sign up, and now thankfully people are coming to this. I see this as a way to allow this board to be more in the details. I mean, we don't want Innovation Park Board to get bogged down in the details on selection, from my perspective,
yeah.
and those types of things. I like the idea of having a separate body do that anyhow. I think way back when we wondered about an advisory board, even if we didn't have to go the 501c3 route. So I love the 09A3. I mean, I think that's a great solution for some of the concerns we did have. I like that relationship. I mean, what you've described of that, I'm glad you're looking for other examples. But I do think, I completely agree, there are so many people who see the potential of this, who are just waiting for this. There could be more expertise on that board for those who are vetting these, and it's a way to expand our engagement throughout the community. So I'm really, this satisfies a lot of my concerns from last week. I understand, or whenever we met 2 weeks ago, your concerns. Vice Chair was going to bring up, but I'm also going to go back to one other thing that we talked about last week. This is always one of those conversations where it's the title and not you, Ron, because I think it would be, I mean, you'd be exceptional on the board, of course, and I think for the startup board, I like the arrangements, and that board could be the chair versus the vice chair, or it could be a past chair, depending on the, you know, the amount of work. But I just wanted to say again, I still have concerns about our executive director being a member of the 501c3 board going forward, because I just have a hard time fleshing that out. I think you've got more independence as an ED of the parent organization to work on both sides if you're not a board member, but this makes me feel better than our conversation during executive committee. So I'm just wondering, I wanted to make that statement that I still have that question going forward, and I guess, well, I'll save that for a second, but we can start off with the three that you mentioned, but we would have an opportunity in the future once we recruit others to reflect on that arrangement a little bit more once we get
you
into
could.
It.
Yeah, because I mean, we would put it in the bylaws that way.
And the board could change the bylaws.
You can amend the bylaws. But
okay.
Look, if I can respond to that.
Yeah, please.
Well, first of all, if you think in terms of government entities, maybe it's unusual to have that. But in terms of when you look at in the corporate environment, and correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I've seen, you typically have board representation from officers of the parent company. It's not unusual to have that.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing it provides is the ability to have two votes on without having sunshine issues.
That's a good point.
And third, I'm still going to be responsible for whoever the executive director is, not to use names. Well, be responsible for the operation of that entity. So that will be my ability to have that involvement and oversight, because the executive director will be
an employee of the 501c3,
yes.
So but paid through the parent organization.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Just a pastor paid.
Yeah.
And there
those
is
are both good points.
There
yeah.
is precedent for this exact situation at Anne Arundel County Economic Development Corporation up in Maryland, they ran the CIC, the Chesapeake Innovation Center, for which I was the executive director. But their executive director, AAEDC, was on my board.
Okay.
Same exact thing.
Like I said, I feel a whole lot better about that and the whole structure than I did during exec committee. So I just wanted to bring that, and that's why I'm good going forward. I just wanted to mention that I'm wrapping my brain around how that would work.
That's a point of caution you're revising in your mind.
Yeah, and I think it relates more to what I'm about to say, and this goes to your point about sunshine, and I'll wrap this up here, that I think having a 501c3 is good for us. There may be people who want to remain anonymous, different donations, other things like that. There may be, I can't really see this group getting involved in a recruitment effort. We have provisions where we can knock things out of exempt them from sunshine for a time. But I do think, because we are a public entity, designing a public record structure for this 501c3 that I would call Sunshine Light is probably in our interest. And that
Absolutely.
Gets to your point, that if we are very intentional about that going forward and recognizing this is different, we are a public entity, we don't have to follow those same rules, but we're gonna voluntarily do XYZ. I think that would help us and help satisfy any questions or concerns in the community, if there ever was any. It was just a thought.
Yeah, one of the other things I didn't mention when I talked about the benefits of not being in the sunshine, it's not just the donors. It could also be the entities that want to participate. You know, we run into this now with the Tech Grant program, mm-hmm. where you have people submitting applications that have really proprietary information.
Yeah.
And they're really, some are hesitant. I mean, we saw an example in this last one where they're very hesitant to really talk in detail about what they're doing. And so if you're looking at you know, admissions mm-hmm. processes, for example, you're gonna have people talking about what they're doing, and they may not wanna do that in a public forum. So
it makes a lot of sense.
So, I mean, we can certainly look at how we can comply with some of that, but I think you also really can benefit from not having, and not to evade, you know, not to hide things, but there's a business purpose of, in many of these cases, not to make all this information public.
But you just, you made exactly, I'm sorry, Dave, you just made my exact point. If we, at the onset, say, we recognize we're not a sunshine group, here are the benefits, here's the ways, you know, we have, when we're vetting applicants, you may not see all these details, but this is the reason, the business reason for it. I think just getting ahead of that and articulating it helps all of us in the future.
Okay.
And
Michael, you had a point.
There is a second reason.
It's exactly that.
The first one is understandable, right? The second reason is that because an incubator director's job is to help these companies grow, their financial information is given to me, and I track their progress, and that's part of the entry requirements. So if that information was now public, mm-hmm. I can guarantee we wouldn't have companies coming to our incubator if that was going to be open to everybody to see.
That's huge.
So it's not just the proprietary nature of their innovation, but it's their financials.
All right, with the understanding that we need a point and place to begin, and with the understanding that we can tweak it as we go, we can change bylaws, we can change whatever, policies, etc., I think the staff has done a real good job of responding to concerns the executive committee has, and with counsel has come back with some good suggestions. Therefore, the chair will place on the floor any question of whether someone would like to make a motion that we proceed.
I'll move.
I'll second.
There's a motion here and a second there. Paul's
a
second. All right. Are there further comments? You heard the motion? Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by like sign. Motion carried. Okay,
that's
good work, Jane.
Good
I appreciate
work.
That.
Yeah, thank you.
That was one item that we just needed to get over the hurdle and move on. Good. All right. You've seen before we have a requirement to set up an RFP for the evaluation of property management and accounting. That is necessitated in that supposedly every 3 years or so we bring that back for consideration, put it out for bid typically, and then evaluate the responses we get. Chair needs to have a committee do that. Chair in the past is not in the capacity of chair, but I've served on a committee of that nature in the past several times. I'm of the opinion that we had at least maybe two meetings that we would need. Ron has some dates laid out there of the dates that he has anticipated we might meet. Ron, you want to cite those dates to us? The reason Ron's doing that is because in a moment I'm going to ask for three volunteers to serve on that committee, that evaluation committee.
So the in that process, if we get more than three bidders, typically we have a preliminary meeting to sort of whittle it down to three. And then the second meeting will be for presentations to the evaluation committee. And if my computer will cooperate, we are looking at July 9th, the week of July 9th for the evaluation committee shortlist. And again, there's no specific date or time set up just yet, so I'm trying to leave it somewhat flexible. But once we pick the first meeting, usually it's a week after, because you got to give the presenters time to, that are actually going to present, a little time to put their presentations together. So then the following week, the week of the 16th, would be the presentations. And again, if we don't need the first meeting, we won't have it. If we only have three, there's usually no reason to meet. So.
Okay. Fun time. I need three volunteers to say, yeah, I'll do those two meetings. There's Paul, there's one.
Can't do it.
Can't do it? Okay. There's two.
No. I want to repeat what I said at the DC meeting, which is, if you can't get anybody else to do it, I don't think this is my bailiwick at all. I don't think I bring much to the process. And I will be out of the country that first week. I will be back the second week. That's best
that
I can do.
That leaves you out then.
I would recommend that Kim Williams, since he's not here, will you nominate him?
Yeah, I was going to do that. I was going to do that. Kim,
check
chair.
His schedule.
Yeah, we'll check. Yeah. We'll check. I mean, obviously, if we can't get three at this point, we'll have to go get some others.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
What's the date? The week of the 16th. What date is that?
We don't know yet. We'll try to stay flexible until we get everybody's schedules. But
I was going to ask that as well, because I'm in town on the 16th, but not the rest of the week. But I will say this, and hey, now you're in this boat too. I think we should think about candidates or potential candidates and any of that, because it's just something that I'm always thinking about. I'm sure you are, if we're soliciting money or doing anything like that, and then also vetting these companies. So
sure.
I'll leave that to you, Dustin, to think about, or the rest of the board.
Yeah.
I don't know where I'll be by that point after qualifying, but for me, you may have other concerns about having one of the government people on this committee. I did it last time, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And I wonder about the universities or the alternates, or TCC might be a nice counterpart to two private sectors. So,
okay.
Not to push it off on anybody, but that's my thoughts on that. So,
I'd be interested for a legal opinion as well about essentially, like, if there was a company who ultimately gets the bid or is being recommended to get the bid, but has also, I don't know, made a political contribution.
Right.
If in that situation you can recuse yourself or should recuse yourself.
Or if they haven't made a journal.
Right. Well,
I mean,
but there's only a small committee, so that would be hard to recuse.
I would say, I mean, Melissa, you're about to say something.
No,
I've
no,
never
I
went
when it comes
in,
back to the big board. I'm sorry.
I just wanted to make sure.
You're not saying to be on board.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Like, when it comes back to the big board and we're making a recommendation, and let's say you're affirmative,
mm-hmm.
you're saying, yes, we're taking the recommendation, but the person who you're recommending is also given financially, it's the appearance of impropriety.
Right. It may not be.
Are you available?
I'm in South Africa. I'm sorry.
Well, Kim has already said on several times that she could not, I think, do things like that because her company won't allow her.
Mm-hmm.
Am I right, Ron, or do you know Kim Dixon?
I don't know.
I don't know that it was.
I don't
that.
Think that one's an issue.
It wasn't
no.
that.
All right, so Chair will ask the Kim with your approval that he contact Kim Williams to determine if he will chair, if we accept Paul's generous offer to serve, and that we then check with Kim Dixon to see if she's available. And if not, we'll give him the approval to go ahead and then call each of you on phone or whatever and talk about where we go.
If your dates were different, I would.
No problem. I'm just teasing you. But no, she Kim's resignation is effective August 31st, so she can still do it.
Perfect. Whether she wants to or not.
Do we want a public sector? I mean, should we consider universities or TCC, Ron Outreach to them, or does that matter? I guess that doesn't matter.
I don't think for this particular one it really
matters. It doesn't matter one way or another. Okay.
It doesn't matter what you're saying. Well, we got any other volunteers down here on this side of the room, on the right side of the room? Or?
And would there be any objection if we had to recruit an outsider?
Chair has no objection to that. Anyone else?
You mean as an evaluator?
Yeah. Three board members.
Yeah, right.
It's tough. It's the summertime.
I understand.
All right, let's leave it with the chair.
Yeah.
With that direction. Does that suit everybody? Mm-hmm. Okay. Next item. We had some discussion, again, kind of lengthy, about the officer terms. If you look at tab M1, I believe it is. M1, you'll see in the last, I think, 38 years, we have used the chair position on consecutive years, at least two, sometimes three, sometimes even four. Faith me to ask the question, does that suggest that it might be more appropriate that we think in the future chairs would have a two-year term instead of a one-year term? Now, this chair is not recommending that. This chair is simply saying, it gave me pause to ask the question, are we appropriate? I know EDC used to have two-year terms. I don't know, there's probably other organizations, but I felt it appropriate enough, at least this body should weigh in on it, think about it, talk about it a little bit, and see if you believe we are appropriately aligned with what you expect your chair in the future to do. And that's up for discussion at this point. Would require bylaws change. There's also some discussion that said maybe instead of having a vice chair, we have a chair elect, similar, but with more specification that you're the next person. So those were two things that kind of kicked around the executive committee. Chair opens up the floor for discussion.
I'll just say I feel like this has come up before, and the concern I remember at that time was just that if you were potentially going to be like a chair-elect, from the time that you're elected chair-elect to the time that you finish your term as chair, it's a four-year commitment. Mm-hmm. And to the extent that an effective chair could like cut their teeth in year one or two and then just become chair, and you know, I think it was, we weren't sure if that would scare people away. People basically making a four-year commitment to go from, yeah. So for me, in my opinion, I think it's a solution looking for a problem. I think it's the way that has set up where the chair just runs twice and is elected twice. I think it's served well, and in situations where it hasn't, it looks like there's been a couple of times where it hasn't. So that's just my opinion.
That was pretty much the conversation we had at Exec, right? That that it's a two-year term or a four-year term, depending. And I'm sorry, it's all four-year terms. We alternate every 2 years, but it's hard to get somebody in the pipeline unless you're anticipating 2 4-year terms. You can't bet on that in the future. It's a big commitment. I like it where it is. I do like the chair elect being a little more formal with that and having a commitment a year in advance. I like that. And I just have to say that I happened to be meeting with Vince Long the other day, and I had this agenda up, and I showed him this list, and I think he got a lot of flashbacks. and maybe had a little bit of PTSD as he read through the list of names. That's
always
so open. Yeah, but the county administrator, because he'd been involved for so long. I mean, this is a real history of going back through the chairs. It's quite remarkable to see that. Anyhow, I just felt like poking a little fun at Vince. But I do like the 1 year. There's always the opportunity for two, and chair-elect would be fine.
Okay. Other comments or suggestions? If I'm reading the sentiment right, we're saying leave the term as 1 year, but change the title of the vice chair to chair-elect. Does that sound right?
Does that prevent a chair from serving two consecutive years?
No.
You would just serve. So a chair-elect would just become chair when the current chair decided not to be chair anymore?
Well, the chair-elect would
be... That's a good
point. That's a question. Does the chair-elect automatically become... Yeah. Let's make the assumption that in both our former chairs, they served multiple years. So if we had a chair-elect, does that automatically mean that chair-elect moves or retains that position, or it's then open for a new chair-elect position to be voted on?
I think it's implied, but you still have to take a vote.
I think it's really good for organizations when they have leadership who want to stay on and manage, because no matter what board you chair, the first year you're learning so much, and then by the time you learn it, you're gone. And so I do think that there's a real benefit to that continuity. And I think when you say that someone's chair-elect, then they're anticipating that the next year they're going to be chair. So I think we need to do one or the other. We shouldn't do both or neither. You know what I mean? So, I think if we extend it to 2 years, we could do the vice chair. And if we have a chair-elect, then we only have a 1 year.
So let me see if I understand what you're saying. If we leave the chair position currently as 1 year, mm-hmm. subject as we've done in the past, to say, golly, you've got what you need, or we need you, or whatever, then are you saying that we take the chair, the vice chair title, and leave it alone, or are you saying we do go ahead and change it to chair-elect?
I guess I would say I would prefer that the chair be a 2-year term, personally. And the chair-elect would take office, you know, after that 2-year term. But I don't know if that puts us out of sync with when people are on the board or when their term expires.
You have the potential. I think this would be very, very unlikely that you have a chair-elect in a position and all of a sudden the chair goes for a second year, and then all of a sudden that means the chair-elect couldn't go in because they'd be turned out. I think it'd be very unlikely that the county commission would say, we don't want that person on your board. Well, Ann, go ahead.
Well, I tried to say this in the executive committee meeting. I don't think I said it very well, and it's still not a well-formed thought, but I think the way the bylaws are now give us maximum flexibility. Mm-hmm. I think that's what we need, and we've kind of shown ourselves that that's what we needed. And frankly, every board I've ever been on, something unanticipated happens. Somebody quits right when they're mm-hmm. supposed to be the chair, or
gets transferred out of town, or whatever.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I wonder about just developing a statement. It's a policy. It's not a bylaw. It is a preference that you elect for 1 year, but that we hope that the chair will serve for 2 years. And that's the idea. The chair will serve for 2 years. And at the second of those years, that we will have somebody who's kind of being teed up to be the chair-elect, who will, you know, and hopefully that is the vice chair, but you don't really have to call him anything.
I'm hearing you say leave the title vice chair.
Yeah, I think leave vice chair, but in this policy statement or whatever, say, you know, we hope that we're developing leaders, and that in the second year of a chair's term, if there is one, that there will be a person in waiting, and that that's assumed to be the vice chair. We hope that's what happens. It may not happen.
Chris? Kristen, you had your hand up.
I think this is a good conversation. I'm content with leaving it as it is right now. I think, to your point, Ann, it gives us maximum flexibility right now. Maybe this is just a little bit of history weighing me down.
Yeah.
Of, I mean, we've been running on all cylinders the last few years, but it has been challenging. I think the 2-year cycle makes it difficult. I like the idea of having, I think a well-functioning organization can withstand leadership turnover as you go, and I think that is good. I mean, 3 years got too much. But I guess I'm also gonna say, and Ron, I actually thought about this when I was reading your report, you may not wanna do this, I don't know if we need to do it, but kind of a strategic planning conversation. I mean, a lot of stuff on that list has been done, has gotten done. I'm wondering if this is more about, this conversation is more about, we're at a new stage in the board, and this is wrapped up in, you know, we're going to have new people on the 501c3. We're going to have all these different, you know, we're going to have a new feeder for this. I'm starting to think this conversation is much bigger. It's about a 5-year plan, 10-year plan for the organization as a whole. And I think it's really good that we're at that point that we know a chair could serve it 2 years, that we're going to have all these new people. But I would put it in that box of a future visioning conversation, strategic planning conversation about where we see the organization going. And do we need more board members? Do we need this? Do we need that? All that can be wrapped up together.
I was going to bring that up in August to set up a strategic planning meeting for the fall. So, yeah.
I think I would rather, for me, put it in that box, leave it alone as is.
It's all right, I'm hearing, leave it as 1 year. I'm hearing from April, 2 years. I'm hearing from Ann sort of a binding of the two that the chair is elected for 1 year, but the chair should sort of give consideration to, you might be tapped for a second year.
Yeah.
Okay. Any further discussion or comment?
I'm fine with leaving it as is.
Okay. Is that a motion?
I move that we keep it the way it is.
Okay. Yeah.
We take no action.
No action.
Right. Motion to take no motion.
Therefore, I don't think we need any action on it. We can just leave it as it is. Is that correct? We're a parliamentarian.
Yeah,
that's correct. Right. Okay. All right. Okay, good. All right, now let's look at the board recruitment. You look at M2. Let's see, and the computer's going dead on me. Let's see here if I can get this thing back opened up. We have 3 board members whose terms will expire. All 3 of those board members have indicated their willingness to continue to serve. We have 1 board member whose term does not expire, but says because of her corporate commitment and requirements and all, she will retire at the end of this year. That will create 1 vacancy. Chair would be glad to have different names thrown out that we might then give to the executive director and sort of allow him to scrutinize them a little bit and come back with some ideas or suggestions why this one may or may not be the best and so on. But are there nominations, I won't say nominations, are there persons who you would believe might make good board members that we should lay their name on the table? The chair can begin with 2 that I know. One would be Ray Bai, who was the former vice president of research for Florida State University and has all kinds of contacts and names and all still in his Rolodex. The other would be Steve Evans, who I sort of had some inquiry as to whether his willingness to serve, and his comment back to me, I very much want to serve, but 1 year out, not next year. So, I think those 2.
We have had another person express interest, and that's Bill Holloman.
Okay, and we all know who he is and who he's married to, so that's another individual that's very active in the community. Kristen, you had a couple of names. You want to put them on the table, or is it too early?
No, I would say I don't have specific names, but Ray was 1, who had talked to me. I'm sorry, I should say, I don't have specific names that I would like to toss into the record, if the chair is okay with that.
Sure.
I think that there should be a push to get all names to Ron in the next week. That's just my two cents on this, because there may be, it just may be a challenging conversation to talk through all this, and we got to be respectful of some of the people who have expressed interest. I'm struggling with this, but I think it's pretty obvious where I'm going. I will say, though, that part of getting on everyone's radar, I met with the president of MEBA. They said that they are focused on this, and they have wanted to recruit a member from MEBA to apply. That's the kind of attention we're getting. I don't want to make any judgment call. I don't have a name on that for that person yet, but I like the fact that other business organizations are looking at us and want to be a part of this conversation. So that was my point earlier, that we're getting a lot more attention. I'll also say I met with Vince Long a couple days ago, and in a staff meeting they had started talking about this. They're ready to start advertising it. I'm sure they have or will communicate with you, Ron.
I actually reached out to them.
You reached out to
them? Yeah.
Okay, well, that's probably why he got the nudge from staff then. Okay. I think getting the link from the county website for applications, sending it out to all the board members, really making sure that we all know how people apply would be good. Dave, is that okay?
And if you get a little vague. And if you get the names to me, what has happened with others is they call me or I'll call them, and I can go through sort of what the commitment is, what kinds of things they deal with, and what the application process is. So I'm happy to do that.
All right, not on the agenda, but I think it's sort of appropriate at this time to inquire if we're getting the right people with the right interest and right desire to serve on this board. Should we expand the board by two persons? That's just, again, something that I don't have a place that I'm pushing or expecting you to sort of fall in line and say yeah, yeah, or no, but I think it's something this board needs to give consideration to. Now, two people would sort of keep us still at the odd number. It may help or may hurt our ability to get a quorum. So those are some issues.
I think
we might need a bigger table. That's another issue.
I think we did. We not discuss this at the last one.
We did.
And decide.
Did we come to the decision at that point in time?
The decision was to hold off and not change it at this time, because the process of getting this through. I think we either were at the point we had to get it initiated. If we were going to expand, we're pretty close anyway.
Yep.
But that was the decision.
I was thinking that was an executive committee, but you're saying it was at the board.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Michael?
One other thing may be that the folks that are inquiring could have the opportunity to join the other board.
Sure.
On the other side.
Very good possibility.
And so if you expand it too much, you're narrowing the pool.
Yes.
I think we're done with this. Technically, I could quickly ask for an agenda item to come back at the beginning of July, but that's late. Vince would like to start advertising for the position now, and we need time to do recruitment. So I think waiting, we can get the county we can request the county commission approve an ordinance change at any time, but it would probably flow into the same cycle unless we ask for something special. So this can come back up in our strategic planning conversation in the fall, but I was gonna piggyback on what Michael said. I think we want to be conscious, I will be conscious in this recruitment, that this board, having more diverse experience, legal and CPAs and others, is PR, very, very helpful, because we're all over. The 501c3 board, people who really understand the commercialization, the tech transfer, vetting companies, others, if you've got someone who's really interested, I think we should remind them that that is going to be an opportunity in the future. Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
Only other thing is, I think, Ron, you said that for those of us who have said yes, we would like to continue, that we will need to apply.
Yeah.
Yes.
All of us, and that you'll let us know when that's supposed to happen.
It's open now.
It is open.
You need to open now.
I sent that in an email, but I will send
I
you.
I missed that.
When I'll send out a link to the application as he requested. You'll get that.
It's on the county
but
website
I asked,
under public or citizen advisory committees.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, sending out the link so people can forward it to others.
Yeah, Dave has already submitted his application.
Yeah.
And Paul, you did get one.
And that includes Paul as well.
Yeah, I got
that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You got yours, okay.
Yeah. I think I better do that.
And while we're talking about filling out, forms, just a reminder, the county has sent to you, each of you on the board, a request for your update of your financial statement and so on. That's due by July the
2nd.
And when you submit that to them, ask for a recorded copy to come back to you or head carried over. It's over there now at the corner of Appalachia Parkway and Capital Circle. It's where that office is, right there where, I don't know who used to be in there, but.
It was a Walmart. You can drop it off at the Ethics yeah. Commission or Supervisor's Office. Like, did they say the Supervisor's Office would take it?
Yeah,
it has to.
Okay.
Not for you. If it's a Form that, 1.
I didn't get the same letter.
You,
so Form
have,
1, you
your
can
form
go
6,
to.
Form
yeah.
1 goes to the Supervisor
okay.
of Elections.
Good.
Yeah,
I just want
to
make sure.
It cannot go
yeah.
through the Ethics. It's
yeah.
supposed to go straight to the Supervisor.
Thank you. Don't listen.
That's the most yeah. confusing form. I was working on it last night and I filled it out one way and then I'm like, oh no, that's not what they want.
Well, there's a lot of opportunities in there to say, okay, this doesn't really require.
Right. I thought it required a lot of things that didn't end up requiring.
Okay, that was just an announcement. At this point in time, let's go to our Director of Programs and Communications and ask for her report.
Sure. Just a recap of the tech grant. It took place on May 16th. There were around 100 people, so we kind of. We expected a lot, probably about 136 is where we capped at. I think the rain really kind of had a factor because when we started it, it was torrentially downpouring. So unfortunately, we had about 100 people. We did raise a record of $11,000 this year, which is the most that we've raised ever. So that was really good. We put it back into all of what we were doing there, so that's great. We had a lot of media coverage. WTXL actually did a story before the event. They were also present there. And then the Tallahassee Democrat also did a story, as did WFSU. And WFSU will be doing a couple more stories about other programs going on.
It sounded good.
Under EEP, I wrote a Your Turn. Well, Peggy and I both did for Kim Williams. So he got credit for it in the Democrat, but it was announcing Larry's retirement. We're really happy. A lot of people were really happy to hear kind of the voice of what he did with that. Next, and you guys should have gotten an email from me by now, but we are hosting an Entrepreneurs Club meeting on June 18th at Grasslands. We will be just making fun of Larry the entire time. It's the toast and roast of Larry Lynch. Sort of as his retirement party and kind of his farewell from the program. Other program support, I'm working with Michael with the different things that he's doing. I'm also working on an event that will probably be taking place in September that will attract people to the park. It might not be solely focused on the different programs, but just kind of spreading awareness about what is actually out here and kind of making it more fun and engaging. Besides that, the last thing I wanted to talk about was Ron and I have suggested that we create a newsletter that we send to the board on the months that we actually don't meet. That way you guys can still see what we are doing and kind of provide an update on what's actually going on in the parks so that you're more engaged even on the months that we don't have a meeting. So if you guys are okay with that, I'll probably start doing that in July and going forward.
It'll be different than what you get in the general newsletter that goes out to the public. It'll be a little more detailed, a little more specific, and you'll be the only ones getting it. So.
And you have the time and resources to do it, apparently.
Well, she's got all kinds of time.
Oh, yeah.
And by the way, speaking of that, if any of you want a Your Turn article drafted for you, if there's a particular topic you're thinking about and you just want, you know, you don't have time to write it, but you want to sign your name to it, They do a great job.
Y'all did a great job on that, and I will have to say I read it.
I have one on cybersecurity for
yeah,
clients.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
I know who wrote this.
I just think there's more opportunity, you know.
It was a great thing.
If it just comes from us, they're just like,
yep.
But if it's from you and you're talking about it,
I
think it's great. So.
I like that. That's a good suggestion. Okay, thank you very much, and thank you for all the visuals you add of our organization and communication skills. You're very much appreciated. All right, our property manager's report.
Yes, I'm constantly chipping away at the ever-growing to-do list, but the list is getting shorter. The Fuqua Center restrooms are just about completed. They'll be 100% complete, I say, by next Wednesday.
Do you have ribbon cutting or anything?
That's a good idea. And then we'll gear up to get started on Morgan restroom. So that's where we're at. I'll be on time at the end of next week. You have nothing to do. Restroom, have a look at what we've done.
I'm very busy.
And that's it.
Okay. Any questions of property management? Again, thank you for the stepped up approach that the company is giving us, and we appreciate you.
Thank you.
All right, Executive Director's report.
Well, you've already seen most of the stuff I've been working on, but the two things that are kind of out there right now is the Collins Building and the trail. Actually, the trail's the easy one to tell you what's going on there. We had a meeting with representatives from FSU Facilities, from the Mag Lab, and from NWRDC to talk about the trail, because it really impacts their facilities, because they abut all of that. The other reason was to make sure that when we get to the portions related to easements, that they're on board and we don't have any issues there. We don't think we do, but in case we do, they're available to help with that. I've already benefited because FSU, as a result, volunteered to scan all the documents, all the drawings from the Mag Lab from 1990 something. So now we have those electronically.
Right.
And they do too, because they didn't have them. So we went out and we walked the trail. I came back covered in ticks. So it was really an interesting experience, but it's really cool. It's going to be fantastic. I'm telling you. Once the process of clearing, is going to take care of a lot of that, and we'll talk to property management about treatment and things that we can do to make it better. But I'm excited about it because I had never seen some of these areas
or so many ticks.
Well,
right.
That too.
It's going to be completely different.
But I'm telling you, it is going to be so cool, because there are areas over there you can't see from our place that are open and clear and look great, and then the other side is just totally wooded, and you can see the old fitness trail they used to have back there that wasn't maintained, and it's all falling down and rotting, and we found examples of beaver that are out there that have cut down trees, and one was very fresh.
Interesting.
So, really a cool environment. Also, evidence of homeless and lots of beer drinkers and others back there. But the one thing that we did note going around there is it is going to take some effort to clear from the trail down to the water to create a more open environment. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of invasive species out there. Fortunately, Felton Hard from Public Works seems to be an expert in this stuff, and he can
sure
point
is.
Out every variety and know what's good and what's not. So. So we're going to look and see if there's room in the budget when we do this to make sure that we can do some of that to clear that out, and then obviously we're going to have to maintain it. But
there are a lot of trail advocates in the community. Do you think you could find some volunteers to work on some of that? Or?
I don't know. We'll have to see what's involved in making that happen.
The ticks.
There's the ticks, and then there's also we've had an issue. We had people who wanted to volunteer to work on the trail, and there's some liability issues that go along with that, insurance and. And basically, our insurance folks came back and said, "Nah, you really don't want to do that because they'll be swinging machetes and hatchets." And, anyway, that was the recommendation at the time, is not to do that. We'll address that when we get more information. But the process continuing is they're ready to get the surveyors out there. I thought I might have seen some out there today, and they're going to go and flag the center line of the intended trail, and then we'll walk it again, hopefully with better repellent. And make sure that's where we want the final position, and then they'll do a final survey from there to do all the design engineering work. And that schedule, the engineer's already been contracted with, so they have a project schedule that I believe gets their part done by November. They're telling me it's a 2-month construction process. So the contract requires April 5th that it be completed, but we're hopeful it'll be before that, probably February, March. So
if you get a picture of that surveyor out there doing that, add it to a story in your newsletter.
Yeah.
Next item, or excuse me, same on this item?
For this or any future work, yeah, we had an issue with the liability question and everything, but volunteer Leon, Jerry Bush, would be a contact to recruit volunteers or cover volunteers that might work on this project or any other. So just keep volunteer Leon in the back of your mind.
They do a good job.
Yeah, if, I mean, she may have organizations or people who work on this stuff. She may be a good contact, but if we went under their umbrella to get volunteers, I think they'd cover the insurance. I don't know if it's necessary on this one, but
yeah. I think we also ought to look at maybe naming rights for the trail and sell some naming rights.
There you go.
$10,000, you get your name on it?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a brick. Yeah. A single brick. Well, we need $7 million.
Yeah.
There you go.
Mr. Okay. You saw that look on my face.
I know.
That look on my face. Well, I know we're running late on time, so I think there might be an opportunity in benches and things like that. We could put a challenge out, maybe to HPMI. Is there some funky materials, Master Craftsman, something? I don't know. I've mentioned this years ago that Madison, Wisconsin, there was an example, I'm pretty sure it was in Madison, of having their different departments create an art piece that represented their tech and others. That's just something else. But this is pretty random. I was on the phone after a meeting at WFSU, went down to the cul-de-sac by Sandland. I'm just kind of glancing at that, and I saw a gentleman fishing by the pond. He left, I looked around, and I thought I had seen evidence of homeless folks there as well. I'm just not sure after we get this done if we want to look at doing some of that clearing around the other pond near Sunnyland.
Yeah, down there, yeah.
One, for access for people who are fishing, but two, maybe limiting some of the hiding spots and things like that. So that's
surprising.
Good point. You mentioned Sunnyland. Have they removed their yet?
The lease is not up yet.
Yeah, it runs out when?
First week of August.
Have they begun this family?
No, they have 30 days. They're required to give us 30 days notice.
Thank you. We enjoyed being here.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
So yeah, they're required to give us 30 days notice if they want to renew. So they have not hit the renewal period yet. They're very close.
Yeah. Okay.
So I'm letting them do what they want to do and not stir in the cart.
Good job.
Going back 3 years prior to any of the recent craziness, J.T. Burnett said they wouldn't be renewing.
I've heard that before.
Yeah, I don't know if anything would change, but that's... Yeah.
I'm just leaving it alone for now.
Yeah.
But it's on the radar.
And?
If I recall correctly, the trail does not include any lighting, right?
Correct. What we did ask, what we teed it up in the meeting, was that they, in their design and engineering, they give us, and in the bidding process, give us an alternate bid that includes the cost of laying conduit, so that if at a later date we decided to put lighting in, we could do it. So at least get that as an alternate bid. Doesn't mean we're going to do it, but we can bring that. If we need additional funding, we'll come back to the board and ask for that. The other thing that was discussed was FSU is asking about putting in their security poles. They're calling them blue lights, and so they are checking into that and what would be required to do.
That's right where I was going. If it's really going to be used, it has to be.
We're going to have to put signage in. We're going to basically at this point say it's open from dusk or from dawn to dusk. We'll put things in there like no fishing, because right now there is no fishing permitted or swimming. And no ice skating, but
darn.
We did have to run somebody out of the pond the other day. I think some kids from CCYS came over and were swimming. One of them went swimming in the pond.
Oh, bad idea.
Yeah. So anyway, they asked me if I lived there.
I don't know.
So that the trail's moving along. So we'll see what they come back with on the design.
I really like those security phones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and we do have six benches in the plan, so on concrete slabs, so that's in there. And then lastly, the Collins building. This has been one of those hurry up and wait.
we are working with, continuing to work with a prospect. Their needs have fluctuated. Their deal is off, is not off, but it's number one, it's under confidentiality, so I can't talk in detail about it, but I can just tell you that they are working on their deal. It looks very assured that it's going to happen. The question is when it happens, because it's contingent on some other things going to happen. When it does, they are very interested in the lab, regardless, but they still want to know if it's feasible for them to put their light manufacturing operation in that building. So I know I'm not speaking very clearly, but there's just as little what I can say. So, but they're looking at 8,000 square feet.
Well, are they trying to determine if it's feasible for them to put their light manufacturing in there? They're looking at that? Or
well, there's a contingent step, and then after that, it's will it fit? What's the cost to them versus what we're going to pay for? Right now, the only we're looking step one, which is the lab. So we with Stephanie, we got a contractor in there last week. They're working on a bid for us. I'm trying to find out if I can do it for under $50,000, so that we can just get bids and go do it and do it quickly. Timing is an issue for them. So we're getting that bid. The other piece is for the light manufacturing is semi-access. They don't need a loading dock, but they do need semi-access. So we are looking at whether or not it's feasible for a semi if we were to cut out the center section of the parking median that runs, I don't know if you can visualize this, but you've got the building, then you've got the sidewalk back there, then you've got parking, then you've got another median, and then you've got the main drive going on the backside of all those buildings up by the golf course. That a semi could come in behind the buildings very easily off of Potsdamer, pull up, and then back into the drive that backs right up into the lab. I don't know if you recall that, but there's a
I trust you.
There's a wide drive right there, okay? It's a matter of whether or not they could maneuver that. The problem is there's a median between the two parking sections that we'd have to take out and make room for it, but that's not a big deal. We'd lose maybe six parking spots. So she's got a truck driver friend who's going
to
come over.
It's feasible.
Oh, did you?
Today, yeah.
Okay.
It's
feasible?
Your idea will work.
Okay. So that was critical for them because they can use a fork truck to and a ramp to get up and down out of a truck, but they had to have that semi be able to have access. So that dictates where we put their warehousing component. So I mean that makes it feasible. We just got to get this other bid in. And, The other alternative was going to be if that didn't work with the drive, we were going to have to look at could we put a drive, actually build a drive, complete driveway off of Paul DeRock back to the center line of the building on the side closest to the border building. We can walk between, and that would be a very expensive proposition. So we are getting the contractor to tell us ballpark what that would cost. So if we had to. But
so if all this happens in best case, what does that mean then?
Well, that still leaves all the offices that we talked about. That's that end. We were looking at 10,000 square feet, so that would take probably the lab is going to be about 1,600 square feet of the 8,000. So you're talking what 6,400 square feet out of the 10,000. So you got 3,400 square feet, 3,600 square feet left.
Okay.
Ballpark.
That's a good chunk of it.
So I know we've been working on Collins for a while. It's kind of, like I said, it's been hurry up and wait. But if we can go into this thing with a tenant, a paying tenant,
yep.
We're way ahead of the game. So it's I'm doing everything I can to bend over backwards to make this work with this particular prospect because it's got a lot of value for us beyond the financial piece, and it's slowing things down, but we really want to make it happen.
We don't have a board meeting until August.
Correct.
You have enough direction already from the board to be able to execute and keep this moving forward over the summer or working with the chair or exec. Do you need anything else on that piece? And this is related to if we initiate, I mean, I think you already have direction to go to work on the whole building. So if this didn't work, you could go and do that, or do you have to come back to the board? I want to make sure we have enough flexibility over the summer to keep this moving.
And that's a good point. The challenge is going to be what comes back on this bid, because my procurement authorization is
between 10 and 50, we have to get three bids, and that requires approval of the board from the three informal bids. We don't have to go do a full-blown RFP. So the board would have to approve that under 50. Over 50, we'd have to do an RFP.
Yeah.
Actually, then under, was it 325,000, we get into some design build requirements, and I believe that's in that ballpark. So it just depends on what comes back. I think what we'll probably have to do is go to the executive committee with whatever, I don't know how much you want to give Dave the authority to do, to approve whatever I do, or... I just don't know. I don't know enough at this point to know what to ask for.
Do we need direction to at least delegate to the executive committee, and then there could be further delegation to the chair, or do you think we already have that?
I think you already have that.
Okay. So just putting out my concern right now, you guys have done a great job. I love it that the contractor is in, and I completely agree with the tenant being in there, and that helps. But if the board reviews an RFP in August, we're not releasing it till October, we're not getting a design build until December, this is where my mind's going. So
absolutely.
I think giving as much flexibility as we can to Ron or the exec is good.
Yes.
I think you have a plan.
I mean, not for over 50 and then between 10 and 50, you've got approved. So I think in terms of the only other author, if you wanted to give me some approval in advance, it would have to be on the RFP, because our procurement policy says that you guys have to approve the RFP before I issue it.
The whole board has to?
The board has to. So the executive committee can always do that and then have the full board ratify it. And we don't have to wait for the board to ratify the executive committee's decision to act. But it becomes kind of moot, the ratification does.
Sure.
If I've already started down that road, but.
Well, that seems to me to offer the best prospect. Yeah. I mean, I think it's easier to go ahead. We could convene the EC by phone, even if we had to, and then get it done.
And in the case of Dave, Dave's authorized to approve things in cases of emergency.
Yeah.
Only, I believe. Mm-hmm.
Would a motion to allow the executive committee to make these decisions over the summer and to decide if additional authority should be vested in the chair, would that help? Because then...
Would that streamline it?
I don't think it changes anything.
Okay. We still have that.
I don't think it doesn't hurt, but it doesn't change the fact that the executive committee could already meet.
Vote and do that.
Yeah, the question is whether or not you give Dave more power than he typically would have.
Mm-hmm. Versus just an emergency.
Versus just an emergency.
And would it be better for the board to say the executive committee can make that decision about the chair's power versus the executive committee making that decision? I don't know. It's a nuance, but...
It doesn't hurt.
Yeah. Why don't we move? Yeah. I move that as a motion.
Okay, good. Second it.
Did you get that, Peggy?
To allow the executive committee to delegate more authority to the chair as needed over the summer, to continue moving Collins Building forward. So it's
for specific purpose of the Collins Building.
Specific purpose of the Collins Building.
Okay, there's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Good, Peggy. Okay.
You've heard the motion, you've heard the second, or it has been seconded. Is there now further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by like sign. Motion carries. Any further from
Peggy,
the executive director?
Do you have the attendance at this point, since we have a six? Yeah, but you have who those six
yes.
are?
Okay, yes, good. I have them when they left.
Okay.
Our next meeting is scheduled now for August the 2nd. Our director has been working on securing an agreement to have, again, an off-campus meeting, off from our building, our offices. Ron, have you got that, and where is it? Maybe Peggy was working on it.
Peggy was working on that, but I don't know if have you made progress on it.
They said, please ask us.
Closer
to the meeting day.
Okay.
And because they were looking for this for next June, this meeting, so they said, just please follow up with us again July. So.
And potentially, it is where and who?
At CAPS.
Okay.
No, HPMI. Say HPMI.
Okay. So potentially, be watching for notices of where the meeting will be conducted. Any further business to come before the board?
I just have one question on behalf of Dan Foss. One of the things that we're concerned about as we go through our expansion, we wanted to bring it to the board, is that we may need additional temporary office space. Some in the next 3 months, and then next summer, maybe a lot. Otherwise, we may have to request from the board the ability to put temporary buildings or something like that, and we would like not to have to do that.
When do you think that's going
to
be?
This fall, we probably would need up to 12 office spaces, maybe two dozen, and then next summer, sometime between June and August or spring to summertime, maybe up to 50.
So summer of 2019.
2019.
So in the fall, we won't we won't have that much office space.
Yeah.
Next, so we have a lease with FSU right now. They have temporary space. They've taken all of it, all but 1,000 square feet, which is two offices.
Okay.
When does that expire?
That expires in April.
But subject to renewal.
But they have month to month after that until they get out. Yeah. So would that, if it was April, May, would that time frame work?
It may. We just don't know.
Okay.
Depending on where we are in construction.
Yeah, that's...
And, so
and that's and that's 13,000 square feet, and they put 130 people in that space.
Okay, and it doesn't have they don't have to all sit in the same building; they can be anywhere.
No, that's all we got is what's in the Morgan building.
Okay, okay.
And what they've done is they we don't have that many offices, but they put their own cubes and all of that right in those offices, and it's really worked out fairly well.
Yep.
So you're just saying it doesn't matter really how big the space is as long as you can get your cubes in there?
Yes.
And they, telephones, et cetera, computer hookups.
Tables. All we need is Wi-Fi because we have voice over IP for phones, so that's not an issue.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, it's, and IT services is who's in there, so they probably already got all that set up when they need it. But.
As you get closer with your specifics, keep Ron informed.
Okay, I will.
And that we'll that would be a good option if the timing works out.
Okay. And then we'll also, obviously, all the office space that we have here, furniture and everything, will be available to Innovation Park if we need it to, because we're getting new furniture.
Like that. Yeah, we'll take this.
I'm sure you'll take this, right?
Michael would like anything from his 40,000 square foot building.
Chair wants to thank the board for their input and for their involvement and their discussion. I always feel it's good when we get people talking around the table. I always learn something new. I always hear a new perspective. I think it's very good that we do this. Well, thank you for your input and your involvement. We stand adjourned unless there's any other questions coming up.
Does anyone still have time to tour? You guys are going to have to